getting your haircut fun.
Lady Jean's new Novi and Troy locations have only the finest all-female staff ensuring a pleasurable experience. Not to be confused with a regular salon. This is a guy's place with your own TV at every station and the personal service that you deserve.
So sit back and enjoy the scenery, and we'll be glad to take care of you.
For their grand opening, Lady Jean's Barbershop in Troy and Novi have haircuts for only $10. That's right, haircuts are only $10 for the entire month of March. No appointment is necessary. Visit Lady Jean's new location in Troy on Rochester Road just north of Big Beaver, or on 10 Mile in Novi for this March special.
At Lady Jane's, we'll treat you right.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott. From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Make your request.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the vibe.
It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy RZP.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF. Riff.
Rocks.
WRIF Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Yeah, that's one of the ways you can get a hold of us here at WRIF, 313-298-WRIF. Now, I know there's lots of you listening all around the country and all around the world. Maybe you don't want to sit on hold for 15 minutes and just want to send an email. CallTalkYes@Yahoo.com. CallTalkYes@Yahoo.com. But, hey, come on. Those rates are so cheap these days. So if you're listening, I don't know, anywhere in the United States. I know a lot of you are listening overseas, Australia, Europe, and Japan, Korea, places like that. Well, I don't expect you to call. In fact, what time is it? Yeah, do we still have our listener in Shanghai? If you're still there, tell us what time it is. It's way into tomorrow already, right? 313-298-WRIF for our immediate listening audience. Call talkyes@yahoo.com for those far away and those that are a little bashful, don't want to get on the air. And by the way, the shorter the better. If you write long ones, I'll try to get to it later. But I get dozens and dozens, hundreds eventually. So if they're real long, I can't edit them by eye. So maybe try to put it out in about four sentences or something. My personal website, nothing to do with WRIF, just me, Peter Werby. It's peterwerby.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E. Last name again, W-E-R-B-E.com. So it's peterwerby.com. Also, we have a chat room. What that means is, you know, you can kind of talk among yourselves while you're listening to the program. It's at tomhartman.com. Tomhartman.com. Keep ringing, too. I guess our producer and phone screener for the night, Jay Hudson, will grab your calls eventually. Jay, you going to grab those guys? There you go. All right. And anyways, Tom Hartman, the nationally syndicated talk show host, old pal of mine, and former colleague. So he says, yeah, you know, he knows I'm not savvy enough to set up my own chat room. Actually, I can't deal with any more of this stuff. I mean, most talk shows, this is public affairs. This, you know, so we don't get a staff here. We have Jay Hudson, our producer and phone screener tonight. That's it. But I don't have anybody working all this stuff. So you can go to tomhartman.com and you can get on board with the chat room and talk among themselves. Why are we hearing all this talking in the background? Yeah. Anyways, Jack Kerouac, the beat writer, his birthday is March 12th, and although he passed away in the late 60s. So we get a little piece on him by Mojo Nixon. Anybody remember him? Quite an entertainer. And also, well, I'm going to, here, I'll save this. I'll launch into what I'm going to launch into. We're going to talk about the Ten Commandments. Vermont just had a series of town hall meetings where they voted on a resolution calling for the United States to withdraw troops from Iraq. Millionaires voting on the minimum wage in the Senate. I like that. All these millionaires sitting around the Senate. Should we give these minimum wage workers another 55 cents an hour? Can you believe that? Lots of other things as well. New poll finds that Bush priorities are out of step with Americans, and mostly having to do with Social Security. Anyways, a lot of talk shows that I've been listening to, they've got really the hot issues. What do they call them? The hot button issues. Martha Stewart. Hey, isn't that cool? That's really what we should be talking about. What Martha has become as a result of her months in jail. You know, has it humanized her? Has it unfrozen the household diva? Jay Hudson, have you found a friend? You got to get that other line as well. And the other big story, Michael Jackson. Hey, there's something that's really affecting our lives. Of course, if we look at this crap, we don't then have to pay attention to those big social, economic, and political forces that so many of us feel absolutely powerless to affect. So we always say, we live in a democratic country. Then why do people feel so powerless? In fact, why are most of us so powerless? That's the real question. If this is a democratic country, why don't we have the power to intervene in a meaningful way into those elements of life that affect us so greatly? So we'll just fasten on Martha Stewart and Michael Jackson. I mean, I always pride myself on knowing nothing about this stuff because, I mean, it is so unimportant when you get right down to it. Oh, I mean, maybe it's kind of interesting. Like that, boy, I'm so proud of myself. I really cannot remember the guy. I'm sorry. I just did remember. Scott Peterson, that case. I knew absolutely nothing about it. Absolutely nothing about it and cared nothing about it. I mean, it seemed like a horrible tragedy. I mean, it was. And the guy was convicted. And I was, I think I mentioned this when it happened, that I was in our local park where we take our dog. And these people say, did you hear the news? And they were all, like, pumped. And I said, what? You know, I thought maybe something really good had happened. They said, Scott Peterson was convicted. And my darling wife said, who's Scott Peterson? And these people's faces fell like, what? How could you not know about the most important thing in the world? You know, whether Scott Peterson, I'm even remembering the wife's name now, Lacey, killed Lacey Peterson. But then if you started posing to him these issues about Social Security and the war in Iraq and the Bush assault on the environment and workers' standards and all that, you know, they'd go, huh? Yeah, well, it's terrible. And again, it's that sense of powerlessness. But I'm going to, unfortunately, we will get to some of those other issues, but I feel kind of compelled to talk about these issues that are related in an odd way, but it again is really a diversion. And this is this whole thing about the Ten Commandments, whether they can be displayed publicly or not. Whether the Ten Commandments can be a symbol just of the country's devotion to its legal heritage, which it's not. It's not based on that. You ever think about that? They always say the Ten Commandments are the basis of our legal system. Well, there's 10 of them, right? There's 10 commandments. How many of them are manifested into law? Ever think about that? It's the basis of our law, so there should be 10 laws. Like, do I have the 10 commandments? Which 10 commandments, of course? That's a real issue as well, because there's Protestant, Catholic, and Hebrew 10 commandments. And what's happening is the right-wing Christian nuts are trying to foist the Protestant ones upon us. And now I get off on that. So thou shalt have no other gods before me. Fortunately, that's not a law. A lot of these people would like to have it like that. And then all the stuff, graven image stuff, can't take the name of the Lord in vain, keep the Sabbath day holy, honor thy mother and father. They've gotten rid of the adultery laws. Bear false witness. So maybe three. Thou shalt not kill, except under certain circumstances, unless you decide the other people. No, that's another. I don't want to. I want to stay focused. The adultery laws are all gone. So kill, steal, or bear false witness. You can't commit perjury. You can't kill. But there's 10 of them. Right? So here's the deal. I was thinking that these people want to thrust their religious views into the public domain. They have this private domain where they have churches, and I mean, let's stick with that. It's mostly churches, although there's religious nuts certainly of every religion. We see them all the time. I mean, we heard from them in a catastrophic way on September 11th. So it's not certainly not just here or domestically or anything like that. But for instance, a 6-foot red granite monument that's on the grounds of the Texas Capitol. And then framed copies of the Ten Commandments were hung 5 years ago on the walls of two Kentucky courthouses. Why? Hey, ever think about that? Why do they want to do it? I mean, even if it was the basis of our legal system, which it isn't, but even if it was, why do they want them there? What do they think it does? What, you see, it's like the gay marriage thing we were talking about last week. They say, this will erode the basis of heterosexual marriage. And you go, why? How? It's a big silence. Same thing with this. What function does this have other than to legitimize a religious state? I mean, essentially, that's what they want. They want the marriage of the political state and their particular brand of religion. Not just their religion, but their particular brand of Christianity, because they always want to put up the King James version of it. Now, you say, well, you know, it's the basis of morality. Is it? I was looking at these headlines, kind of like dueling headlines in the February 28th New York Times. First story is the Ten Commandments reached the Supreme Court. And it talks about how the people that are arguing for it, they say that we have to have some sacred centering to our lives, or we become evil people. So, I mean, I guess they would think that an atheist like myself doesn't have any ethical mooring. That because I don't believe in God, anything's possible. I would do anything. Cheat, steal, commit adultery. What are these other things? Take the Lord's name in vain and steal. Did I say that? I would bear false witness. But we know pretty well that that really doesn't have much to do with what's going on. Because right next to this, the Ten Commandments reached the Supreme Court, is relief and bewilderment over arrest in Kansas killings. Now, this is the arrest of Dennis L. Rader. He was the man who was, what do they call this guy? The BTK killer, blind torture and kill. He was a serial killer, and of course, he had just been elected as the president of his church council in January in Wichita. So it's pretty clear. I mean, who would you want next to you? You know, an atheist is not going to blind, torture, and kill you, or a very religious, devout man like this guy. Well, Justice Anthony Kennedy says if you go into a courtroom and there's the Supreme Court there, it says if the atheist walks by, he can avert his eyes. If I go on in there, I know some right-wing Christians have forced this into the public arena, and it's going to make me pretty nervous and not feel that I can get a fair shake there. One of the things that they're arguing is that in both in the Texas and the Kentucky cases, that they're placed in such a way that they're historical, that they're decorative, and they say that it's diluted, that the religious nature of it, their religiosity has been diluted such that they don't have a religious character. So why put them up there? I mean, what's the deal? I mean, besides, I am the Lord thy God. And the Ten Commandments represent specifically Judeo-Christian beliefs. And increasingly, there's more and more people in this country who don't share that belief. I mean, it's not like people like me, it's not like I'm going to go stomp on it. But, you know, I was thinking, I mean, when I was thinking about this stuff, I mean, I started thinking, you know, I was going to say, take your stupid religion. And then I'm thinking, why am I saying that? That all of a sudden, this brings up in me and others this controversy. Because this is what these right-wingers are always doing. They are always creating this controversy that winds up in bad feelings between people. So, here's what I'd like to do. By the way, I don't know what's going on. I'm looking at the... we have a little screen here. And I'm wondering if... Jay, are you seeing these calls that are... Okay, you got that one. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to just take a little... I'll have a little comment here on the Ten Commandments, but I see, can I do this here? Yeah. This is George Carlin, and this is what, oh, by the way, I wanted to say, this is kind of unlike me. I almost want to apologize in advance, because I think some of you are going to be offended by Carlin, because he's very, very, what's the word? Oh, irreverent. Right. He is not reverent. He is irreverent. And some people may take this as a very offensive piece of work. I mean, I would say turn the radio off for about 5 or 6 minutes. But this is what happens. These religionists want to take their beliefs that properly belong in this private sector of houses of worship and force it into the public sphere. And I was saying always. Remember last week we were talking about that always. When the state and religion are conjoined, it's always disastrous. One nation under God, Iran, right? One nation under God, the Taliban. One nation under God, all these countries in Europe during the Middle Ages. Bad stuff. Inquisition, Crusades, all of that. So you want to keep it private, you don't want it public. But let's listen to George Carlin on WRIF.
Now, folks, here's something else I got a problem with. The Ten Commandments, you know? Yeah, let me tell you. Listen, here's my problem. Why are there 10? You don't need 10. I think the list of commandments was deliberately and artificially inflated to get it up to 10. It's a padded list. Here's what they did. About 5,000 years ago, a bunch of religious and political hustlers got together to try to figure out how to control people, how to keep them in line. They knew people were basically stupid and would believe anything they were told, so they announced that God had given them some commandments. Up on a mountain, when no one was around, God had given them the Ten Commandments. But let me ask you this. When they were sitting around making this shit up, why did they pick 10? Why 10? Why not 9 or 11? I'll tell you why. Because 10 sounds official. 10 sounds important. They knew if it was 11, people wouldn't take it seriously. Say, what, are you kidding me? The 11 commandments? Get the f*** out of here. But 10... 10 sounds important. 10 is the basis for the decimal system. It's a decade. It's a psychologically satisfying number. The top 10, the 10 most wanted, the 10 best dressed. So having 10 commandments was really a marketing decision. And to me, it's clearly a bullshit list. It's a political document artificially inflated to sell better. I'm going to show you how you could reduce the number of commandments and come up with a list that's a little more workable and logical. We're going to start with the first three, and I'll use the Roman Catholic version because those are the ones I was taught as a little boy. I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not have strange gods before me. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Thou shalt keep holy the Sabbath. Right off the bat, the first three, pure bullshit. Sabbath day, Lord's name, strange gods. Spooky language. Spooky language. Designed to scare and control primitive people. In no way does superstitious nonsense like this apply to the lives of intelligent, civilized humans in the 21st century. You throw out the first three commandments, whoosh, you're down to seven. Next, honor thy father and mother. Obedience, respect for authority. Just another name for controlling people. The truth is, obedience and respect should not be automatic. They should be earned. They should be based on the parents' performance. Parents' performance. What? Some parents deserve respect. Most of them don't. Period. You're down to six. Now, in the interest of logic, something religion is very uncomfortable with, we're going to jump around the list a little bit. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. Stealing and lying. Well, actually, these two both prohibit the same kind of behavior. Dishonesty, stealing, and lying. So you don't need two of them. Instead, you combine them and you call it, thou shalt not be dishonest. And suddenly, you're down to five. And as long as we're combining, I have two others that belong together. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Once again, these two prohibit the same kind of behavior. In this case, marital infidelity. The difference is coveting takes place in the mind. And I don't think you should outlaw fantasizing about someone else's wife. Otherwise, what's a guy going to think about when he's waxing his carrot? But marital fidelity is a good idea, so we're going to keep the idea and call this one, thou shalt not be unfaithful. And suddenly, we're down to four. But when you think about it, honesty and fidelity are really part of the same overall value. So in truth, you could combine the two honesty commandments with the two fidelity commandments and give them simpler language, positive language instead of negative, and call the whole thing, thou shalt always be honest and faithful, and we're down to three. Thou shalt, they're going away fast. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. This one is just plain f***ing stupid. Coveting your neighbor's goods is what keeps the economy going. All right? Your neighbor gets a vibrator that plays, O Come All Ye Faithful. You want to get one too. Coveting creates jobs. Leave it alone. You throw out coveting and you're down to two now, the big honesty and fidelity commandment, and the one we haven't talked about yet, thou shalt not kill, murder, the fifth commandment. But when you think about it, religion has never really had a big problem with murder. Not really. More people have been killed in the name of God than for any other reason. All you have to do... Sure. All you have to do is look at Northern Ireland, the Middle East, Kashmir, the Inquisition, the Crusades, and the World Trade Center to see how seriously the religious folks take thou shalt not kill. The more devout they are, the more they see murder as being negotiable. It's negotiable. You know? It depends. It depends on who's doing the killing and who's getting killed. So, with all of this in mind, I leave you with my revised list of the two commandments. Thou shalt always be honest and faithful to the provider of thy nookie. And thou shalt try real hard not to kill anyone. Unless, of course, they pray to a different invisible man from the one you pray to. Two is all you need. Moses could have carried him down the hill in his f***ing pocket. And if they had a list like that, I wouldn't mind those folks in Alabama putting it up on the courthouse wall. As long as they included one additional commandment, thou shalt keep thy religion to thyself.
Thank you, George Carlin. George Carlin on the Night Call Show. Hi, I'm Peter Werby. And again, I have the sense of the need almost to apologize to anyone that was offended by it. But that's what happens when religion gets thrust into the public sphere. People start arguing about it. I mean, he was talking about all those wars between religious groups that are still going on that motivate people not to do good, but to do awful. And I'm not putting that on anybody. You know, it's like if the shoe fits, wear it, one of those things. Let's see, I actually had some email here. Carla writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Say, Peter Werby, I'm an atheist too, and it's refreshing to hear someone broadcasting who says that. There's tons of atheists, but because of the nature of this country, people just don't have the guts to say it publicly. She says, I'm a big fan of Tom Hartman, your friend. I listen to him almost every day, but even Tom, in his gentle way, does believe in God. Yeah, he does. Yours is only the second program I've heard that makes any mention of atheism, and I like that. Well, good. Thank you. Big deal. So what? Does that make me some awful person or something like that? I mean, think about all the people that are religious that have done such awful things. That the religion hasn't seemed to affect them one little bit. All right, let's take our first call. It's Roy calling in from Placitas, New Mexico. Roy, an old friend from the IE America radio days. Hi, Roy. Are you with me, brother? Okay, could I be doing something wrong here? No. I know what I did. I got to go like that. Roy, you with me?
You bet.
Okay, Roy, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing,
Peter? Doing good.
Good. I just went down this afternoon and saw an absolute, total, powerful movie called The Power of Nightmares.
The Power of Nightmares, huh?
It is a BBC documentary, and somebody had got a pirated copy, and they rented a theater, and we saw it. It's 3 hours.
Wow.
And it is absolutely one of the most powerful movies that I've ever seen.
Well, don't leave us in suspense, Roy. What's it about?
It starts with the conception that the whole Al-Qaeda thing is a myth.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I have heard about that.
Tom Hartman wrote a terrific article about it last fall. That's where I first heard about it. I'd heard some of the audio. I'd read the transcript. But until I actually saw the movie, I was absolutely staggered.
Well, I have to tell you, I have had a waiting, I don't know, it's not waiting. It's been waiting for me to bring it out that much of this terrorist threat is just...
It's a myth.
There are people out there. See, we ran a whole generation on the myth that the Soviet Union was going to wanted to take over the world and was going to attack the United States. Of course, when all the records come out and they now that the Soviet Union is no more, we found out they'd never had any plans whatsoever to invade the United States or attack the United States. Never had any plans to attack or invade Western Europe. And essentially, what this was this functioned as a myth that allowed this massive expenditure on war goods and preparation for war that was never needed to be fought, or a conflict that never had to be engaged, and also to suppress internal dissent. Hey, does that sound a little familiar today?
It sure does.
Yeah.
It's just the culmination of the whole thing. Your listeners can go up. If they'll just Google The Power of Nightmares and then look for a site that is called informationclearinghouse.info.
Well, I'll check that out.
They can actually download it. They can watch it streamed.
Wow.
They can watch it streamed. They can read the transcript. It is phenomenal.
The Power of Nightmares. All right, Roy, thank you so much for staying in touch for so long from Placitas, New Mexico. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. All right, Jay, we're fighting for the mouse here, as you can tell. Where's my next caller? All right, your turn to use the mouse. I forgot we were going to try to figure this out. He's got a screen in there. I've got a screen. Point to it. Take the mouse. Go ahead. Go ahead. Come on, Jay. There you go. That guy. All right, put him on the air. You can do it. All right, hit your mouse. Hi, this is Matt in Westland. Matt, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling to say how you're talking about the control freaks.
Yeah?
The government is another form of control freaks, especially the FDA. Not trying to scare anyone here, but they're putting beliefs into our heads that we need medication and that getting sick is normal.
The Food and Drug Administration, well, give me an example.
They said, like, getting colds and stuff is perfectly normal when it's not.
Well, wait a minute. What do you mean normal?
Like, getting sick is like the most normal thing in the world.
Well, all organisms can pick up other organisms that don't do it very well. I mean, I'm not sure that what you're saying makes any sense. Come on, you got to give me a little more.
Like, diseases are common, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, the diseases are common for a lot of reasons that have to do with the environment and which causes eroded immune systems and all that. You mean stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you are right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take, for instance, I've always used this example. If you take a cancer map of the United States and an industrial map of the United States, it's identical, right? All right. Someone's telling you to go to bed. Go ahead. Thank you, Matt. All right. Let's take another call before we go to our spots. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi. How you doing?
Doing good.
All right. The thing I wanted to mention was something on conformity. A lot of the strictures that were set down, whether it's, you know, religion, law, or anything like that, were, you know, set up during a time and everything where fear motivation, you know, I mean, we all know that and stuff by instinct and stuff. There's a Vincent Bugliosi wrote a book called Betrayal in America. I don't know if you ever read that. He's the guy that prosecuted Manson, and he mentioned two types of crime, malum prohibitum and malum in se. Malum in se being the protoplasm, meaning crimes in themselves. And I think where human nature is concerned, a lot of these things kind of naturally arise,
mm-hmm.
you know, for needs and all that other stuff. What happens is that it gets diluted over the centuries, and, you know, what you have is just Simon Says crap and everything. You got to eat fish on Friday and everything like that to help out the fishing industry, really. But they tell you out of piety, you know. So,
well, every religion on the planet, virtually, when you get down to its core rules of behavior, of how people interact, it's all the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Beyond that, if people want to start believing in one god or goddess or gods or whatever, that's all right with me. But they have to take that admonition of the golden rule first and foremost. That means you have a peaceful, fair world. If you have everybody praying to Allah or God or whoever else across that people do across the world, and you're not employing the golden rule, well, it doesn't matter how pious you are. People are still getting hurt. People are still suffering. People are still, you know, with small groups of rulers are dominating the masses of people.
Right.
So
there's a lot of different Unitarian formulas that people have tried to come up with nowadays and stuff, to come up with the perennial notion that, you know, we're under the auspices of some nameless force or anything like that. Nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, too, and there's a lot of good ethical atheists out there, you don't want to hear the flack that comes out of, you know, something that whose bottom line is pure cynicism either. You know, somebody that, you know, necessarily would say these things because they had bad experiences with religion. So it's, you know, it's two sides of the same coin and stuff, because spirituality is something. It's just, it's undefined. And, you know, there's a lot of things and stuff that are going to have exterior correlates.
You got it. All right, I got to take a break. Thank you so much for your call. We'll be back right after these.
Hey, I'm David Hall from Rock Financial here with the MVP Chunk.
Listening, WRIF.com.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Make your request.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the Hoopa.
It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF. Riff.
Rock.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit ucmore.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
This is WRIF.com. There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
Poncheros Mexican Grill. Get yourself some. That's the sound of fresh dough being pressed into homemade tortillas. Poncheros builds your burrito by filling the homemade tortilla with fresh ingredients right before your eyes. Your choice of steak, spiced pork, chicken, or freshly grilled marinated vegetables. Add vegetarian beans, rice, Poncheros award-winning salsas, and fresh guacamole. Now that's a burrito. Fresh, delicious, and bursting with flavor. So grab the family or friends and get yourself some. Burritos made fresh at Poncheros Mexican Grill. Poncheros, it's good. Poncheros, it's fresh. Poncheros, it's for you. Get yourself some.
Come taste for yourself at the newest Poncheros location in Livonia at 6 Mile Road in Hagerty.
Lunchtime Rocks with the Doc.
You pick the Riff Rock, you win the prizes.
It's the High Noon All Request Lunch Hour.
Weekdays at noon
with the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell.
Only on 101 WRIF,
Detroit's Rock Station.
Out in Metro Detroit, this is Biker Bob, and I'm coming to Motown in March to bring you the newest Harley-Davidson experience.
Who's Biker Bob?
Oh, my gosh, it's
Biker Bob is coming to Detroit.
We want to thank Metro Detroit for making Motown Harley-Davidson and Taylor the Great Lakes region's top dealership. And now we're proud to announce a bunch of cool new stuff, including our new name, Biker Bob's Harley-Davidson.
Biker Bob's grand opening weekend is March 4th through 6th. All weekend, you can stop into Biker Bob's guest services desk to pick up your temporary tattoo. Send us a photo of you with a tattoo in a wild location. The top 10 wildest entries receive a $50 Biker Bob's Harley gift card. Entries and winners posted on www.bikerbobshd.com after March 10th. Friday, March 4th, bring your dingiest, oldest, well-loved Motown Harley t-shirt to exchange it for our special limited edition Biker Bob t-shirts while supplies last.
We're in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka. For more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web at www.bikerbobsharley.com. For a good time and a great ride, you'll be hanging out at Biker Bob's.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The List All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9
on 101 WRIF, Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock
Station. Here in Detroit, right? Not so good. Not so good in other cities as well. Uncle T writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hey, Peter, I just wanted to tell you I have a nephew in Iraq. He calls me weekly. He says all he wants to do when he gets home is get stoned and drunk. He says, F this place. Sounds like 1968 and 1969 to me. Huh. You know what that means, when the army almost fell apart because it was clear to the men in the field that this was an undertaking that was not worth the lives of anyone involved. American jails in Iraq are bursting with detainees, so thousands of Iraqis are being shoved in these terrible prisons that were mostly Saddam Hussein's prisons, right, like Abu Ghraib. And right now, over 3,100 people are being kept in facilities for 2,500. And the U.S. every year cites these countries that have a poor record of human rights. And they said that, this is amazing, that the government of Iraq created an array of human rights abuses last year, including torture, rape, and illegal detentions by police officers and functionaries of the interim administration that took power in June. In the Bush administration's bluntest description of human rights transgression by the American-supported government, the report said that Iraqis, quote, generally respected human rights, but serious problems remained, such as arbitrary deprivation of life, torture, impunity, poor prison conditions, particularly in pretrial detention facilities, and arbitrary arrest and detention. I mean, would you say that they generally respected human rights? These are our boys, too. This is the kind of democracy that's being brought to Iraq. So there's another torture regime in there. Of course, the United States has become a torture state. We have from on high, from Rumsfeld, from the Attorney General Gonzalez, saying that the president is above international law and above the Constitution in allowing prisoners to be tortured. And also, but So, well, wait a minute now. Isn't Bush trying to get democracy everywhere in Egypt and Pakistan? Well, you know that the United States is taking prisoners and sending them to these torture states that we give billions of dollars of tax money to, our tax dollars, and then they're tortured hideously. And what are we going to do if these countries become democratic? How are we going to have these prisoners tortured? What do you think about that? Also, we're talking about belief in God, something I have none. Daryl writes in from Sterling Heights, the call talk, yes, at yahoo.com. Peter, being an atheist, do you think there is existence after death? Well, I wouldn't have no reason to believe there is, but who knows? I would think not. It doesn't make much sense. And if not, what's your motivation for life? Bertrand Russell, the great English philosopher and an atheist, said, when someone asks me the meaning of life, I ask them, what do you mean by the meaning of life? I mean, we're here. We have a commitment to life by virtue of being here. We have a commitment to other people, to our community, to what have you. And there's a weird, oh, I don't know, I shouldn't use that word, that'll get me in trouble. It wasn't a bad word, but it'll just confuse things. But I don't know. I don't think atheists have any problem finding the meaning of life. He says also we need to get this religious mindset and group prayer out of the military. That's what he says. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Hey, I don't know if this is still happening, but if you're listening online, if you're the stream and not listening in the WRIF immediate listening area, which I was doing a couple Sundays ago. Oh, yeah, I forgot all about this other thing. Anyway, you miss about a minute or two of the broadcast before it comes back because of some bizarre deal. But the engineers told me they were going to end this. Now, Sarah writes in, why is there always such a problem between the sound levels of your callers as opposed to you? If I crank it up enough to hear the callers, you are way too loud. If I fix the level for your voice, I can hardly hear the callers. This seems to happen always and is especially bad this week. Help. Now, are you listening online, Sarah? Now, what I would wish, I mean, this would be terrible. I mean, I don't know what to do about the streaming, but if this is what's happening with our radio signal, this is really bad. All right, let's go back to our phone calls, and joining us now is Maurice from Inkster. Maurice, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for joining us.
I have a theory and a comment.
Sure.
People being killed in the name of God, I just think it's the way to balance the world's population.
Well, we've had quite a go at it during the 20th century.
And another thing, as far as the, you still there?
Of course.
You know, as far as this country, building up the war machine.
Uh-huh.
I just think they did that for they can become the bully of the world and keep the people down from not giving no money for the programs we need, to run our country, for our infrastructure, for our bridges, roads, education, different programs.
You are so radical. I mean, you actually think that we ought to take our tax dollars and use it for schools and roads in our area?
Do you realize in the last 3 years after we placed 3 sets of ball joints on my car?
Yeah? What's that have to do with anything?
The potholes in the road.
Okay. Yeah, that does do something. I was looking for all this list of things that that we're missing here because we're giving all this money to, some of it's going directly to Iraq, but most of it's going to American companies. So rather than our money going to fix our neighborhoods and our communities and our cities and our states, it's going somewhere else, going to real rich people here in the United States. Or I was saying the other week, they send over millions of dollars in American cash to Iraq. If you can imagine that. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. We're going to go to Carl in Clinton Township. Carl, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Peter. Hey, I was just wanted to remind you as I'm listening to your show of why this country was founded. It wasn't just the pilgrims coming over for freedom from Europe or from oppression. It was religious freedom that they sought in the first place. And while I'll agree with you that maybe the Ten Commandments, and anytime you mix religion and government directly in with each other, they definitely don't mix. The idea that your religion should be something that you keep quiet and something that nobody should talk about in public, or that it's a crime to display how we believe in public that just doesn't work. You know, I don't know how, as a reasonable society, you could expect that when I believe something as strongly as you believe something, that you should have to hide it in an aspect of life, such as your county courts.
I don't think we have to hide it. It's all over our money. There's churches and other religious institutions all over our city. A lot of the oaths that people take are religious. So, I mean, there is a recognition in this country, contrary to most other Western democracies, that religion is prominent. But it's like, give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. Also, I mean, we know that citing the pilgrims is not the best example, because these people were so intolerant, as were all the different denominations that came over here. If you didn't have the same religion as they did, man, you were in the stocks.
That's true all over the world still today in countries that decide not to change their religious basis or the way they feel, such as Iran and Iraq. So, I mean, just to believe that it's not something you should have in public, if a local organization, a local government decides that it's all right to have that on display and all the constituents agree with it, then why not put it out there?
Well, I think there is, one of the reasons we have a constitution is so the majority doesn't run all over the minority. And a society works best where potentially controversial private beliefs aren't endorsed by the government. So you don't need you don't need crutches on public property. People can put them on their lawns or on the churches. I mean, why in the world would you put it on City Hall, for instance?
True.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate your call. By the way, everything has its rewards. Remember Tom Ridge? He was the first secretary of the Department of Fatherland Security. He was also a governor of Pennsylvania. And he was the guy that famously said that one of the ways we would be safe would be if we should have duct tape and plastic sheeting on hand. That was in case we got hit by anthrax or, I don't know, sarin gas. Remember, there was always people, they had us all in a fright about that. So duct tape and plastic sheeting. And I'm thinking, this is pretty weird. I mean, a guy telling us that we ought to have duct tape on hand. And I kept hearing it, duct tape, you know, plastic sheeting. Well, here comes the reward. Tom Ridge has been named to the Home Depot Board of Directors. Can you believe that? Where they sell a lot of what? Duct tape and plastic sheeting. I know. I mean, I'm only partly kidding, dear friends. 313-298-WRIF. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. Here's Scott in Westland. Scott, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete. I guess I'm afraid I have to make a correction of something I said, I think it was while you were on vacation.
Oh.
I was on. And, I foolishly tried to make a comment about Iraq, and even in the context of what I was saying then, I know, you know, why wade into those waters, they're full of sharks. I got it backwards. I guess I was, you know, I even asked your alternate, who is the majority in Iraq right now?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we were both wrong, and even though I got it backwards, okay, I ended up talking as though the Sunnis were the majority, which, of course, they're not. I guess the Shiites were the majority. But in point of fact, I guess what the recent election revealed was the Shiites are not even a clear majority in that there are more than 50% of them. They're what is known as a plurality, which means that
right.
They are actually the largest of the many factions there. And, maybe I shouldn't even repeat what I said because, again, it's that old cliche, is that the light at the end of the tunnel or is that an oncoming train? I was trying to say that, okay, that perhaps Sunni extremists were disrupting this holy day, you know, that the Shiites have, and that, they were risking provoking, you know, some kind of, alliance between the Kurds and, you know, the Shiites, you
mm-hmm.
know, by acting that way. But, again, some other people would say that that's only proof that, you know, if we weren't there, the Kurds would secede, you know, to antagonize the Turks, and then also, you know, there would be a civil war between the Sunnis and the Shiites. You know, so that's not really why I wanted to mention that. But I just want to...
Well, there's no telling, of course, what would have happened if the United States, George Bush, hadn't have illegally intervened, invaded Iraq. we find out more and more, there was all sorts of plots against Saddam Hussein, and people knew his days were coming to an end, but he was necessary. He was a necessary component part of the long-term strategy of Bush and neocons to establish this imperial outpost in Iraq, no matter how many Americans and Iraqis have to die. All right, thank you, Scott. Appreciate your call. Our next caller is Steve from Southgate. Steve, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really appreciate your points of view on everything, and I just love you for it, and that's all I got to say. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's a short one and a sweet one. And Jay Hudson, why don't you point to the next caller? This is Jay Hudson is our producer and also our phone screener. So, or am I just going to take one? Whichever one I want. All right. I can tell who's been there the most. All right. Here's Andrew from Ypsilanti. Andrew, thanks for being so patient. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to talk about how you were saying earlier about religion causing controversy.
Yeah.
And I couldn't agree with you more, and I have a perfect example for that. I went to a high school that was, like, really small town. Like, this one particular youth group kind of, like, ran a majority of the students, basically. And this time of the year, during the anniversary of the Roe vs. Wade case, they always have everybody put on these T-shirts to say, abortion is homicide.
Homicide, wow.
Yeah, I know. And I was just saying, like, what's the good in that? I mean, if you have a girl, let's say she's, I don't know, 16 years old, might have even had an abortion, whatever the case is that really going to get her closer to their God? Like, I really don't think so. I think the only purpose of that is to be like, hey, you're a jerk. Let's start an argument. Like,
yeah, they're mean-spirited people. They always talk about love and their God of love and they love everybody and all that. But when you get really down to it, they're some pretty mean-spirited, cold-hearted people, and they really know it. I mean, this compassionate conservatism and all that. I mean, compassion is something they are so far lacking in. And someone, I'm sure someone's going to call in and say, oh, no, that's not true. I'm a very compassionate person. I'm involved in charities and all that. All right, if the shoe doesn't fit, don't wear it. But I'm saying as a generality, which is unfortunately in many ways the only way we can discuss large subjects, I think that's an accurate description.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Something popped. Oh, yeah. I know what popped into my head. Here is, so, I mean, my view of Christians gets shaped by what comes in the media. These loudmouthed, as I said, mean-spirited, antagonistic Christians that are always trying to dominate other people. So, and that really gets my back up. Now, actually, the only Christians I know are liberal Christians and really good, decent people who do good work in the world, who do charity all the time, who practice what they call social witness, that the manifestation of their belief in God and Jesus doesn't come about by trying to always shove religion down people's throat, but rather by the good acts they do in the world. Now, I'd said last week, and I said I was going to talk more about this, oddly enough, I almost completely forgot about it. That was my trip to Cuba. Now, most Americans can't go, but because being a journalist, that I get what's called I get a pass on it. I can go and find out what's going on and then report back to you. And some people have written in and said, tell us more. Well, I'm not even sure what you want to know. I was in Cuba for 8 days. I saw a lot of things. I was in some ways more confused about the whole place than when I right before I arrived, but any questions you'd like to ask me about it, I'm sure glad to answer. But anyways, and I may have told you this last week, I was sitting in, yeah, I did, because I was Cathedral Square, where the huge cathedral is, and I just said to my friend, at least I'm here someplace where I'm not going to run into somebody I know. As soon as I say that, here I hear this voice, Peter Werby, I didn't think I'd see you here in Havana. And it was this woman from this Christian group called Witness for Peace that brings food and medicine and a lot of needed things to Cuba. And they're not doing it as missionaries. They're not like these creepy right-wing Christians who go to the tsunami area and kidnap hundreds of children and then say, great, we can raise them as Christians now. We got them away from their evil, whatever, you know, Muslim or animist religion. They simply commit their acts because they know they're right. And they believe in the golden rule. And their beliefs about God and Jesus and salvation and all of that are extremely private. I mean, they go to churches. They have churches that are out there in our community, and that's fine. But they don't spend their time trying to shove this down people's throats.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more of your calls right after this.
So you're listening to WRIF.com.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
With the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock. With Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9.
On 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station.
Poncheros Mexican Grill. Get yourself some. That's the sound of fresh dough being pressed into homemade tortillas. Poncheros builds your burrito by filling the homemade tortilla with fresh ingredients right before your eyes. Your choice of steak, spiced pork, chicken, or freshly grilled marinated vegetables. Add vegetarian beans, rice, Poncheros award-winning salsas, and fresh guacamole. Now that's a burrito. Fresh, delicious, and bursting with flavor. So grab the family or friends and get yourself some. Burritos made fresh at Poncheros Mexican Grill. Poncheros, it's good. Poncheros, it's fresh. Poncheros, it's for you. Get yourself some.
Come taste for yourself at the newest Poncheros location in Livonia at 6 Mile Road in Hagerty.
WRIF.com.
Anglers, get ready to cast your line for a big money this year because the WRIF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of four tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the four tournament series will also win $1,500 cash plus the title of 2005 WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the Riff. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRIF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. 2 to 3 person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
Lunchtime Rocks with the Doc.
You pick the Riff Rock.
You win the prizes.
It's the High Noon All Request Lunch Hour.
Weekdays at noon with the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell.
Only on 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
Hi, boys. Where do you go to get your hair cut? Are you still going to the same old boring barber shop or the overpriced salon?
Well, it's time for a change of scenery because Lady Jane's has just opened new shops in Novi and Troy. Get your haircut at a guy's place. No women, no children allowed. And we make getting your haircut fun.
Lady Jane's new Novi and Troy locations have only the finest all-female staff, ensuring a pleasurable experience. Not to be confused with a regular salon. This is a guy's place with your own TV at every station and the personal service that you deserve.
So sit back and enjoy the scenery, and we'll be glad to take care of you.
For their grand opening, Lady Jane's Barbershop in Troy and Novi have haircuts for only $10. That's right, haircuts are only $10 for the entire month of March. No appointment is necessary. Visit Lady Jane's new location in Troy on Rochester Road just north of Big Beaver or on 10 Mile in Novi for this March special.
At Lady Jane's, we'll treat you right.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Sky. From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Make your request.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the Dubai.
It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF. Riff.
Rock.
Anything. Oh, and people have different answers for it. So why is this one particular one any better than all of the others? In fact, if I was going to choose a religion, and since I'm of European ancestry, why wouldn't I choose paganism? Right? What later for this monotheism, one sky god? I like the fact that there's like lots of gods and that everything has a sacred quality to it. When the god is up in the sky, well, you know, then like a sacred grove of trees becomes timber. People, it loses its sacred quality and all that. Anyways, let's go on to the millionaires. I mean, you can keep, if you're on the line waiting, come up with the comment you had. I'm all over the place. I always got a week's show, you know, like in one day, so it's a little hard. The millionaires in the Senate are gearing up for a vote on whether to raise the minimum wage for the first time in 8 years, and you'll be glad to know that the compassionate conservatives want to raise the wages of minimum wage workers $1.10. Hey, that extra dime in there. I thought I was just going to do it $1. The Democrats want to raise it to $7.25. $7.25. That's still disgraceful. I mean, why is it the richest country in the world, we've got the worst minimum wage in the world? Where are we number one? Remember how you say that? USA, USA, number one, number one. What are we number one in? Wouldn't it be nice if we were number one in wages, for instance? Wouldn't it be nice if we were number one in time off for vacations? Wouldn't it be great if we were number one in the shortest work week? And if we have a society that has such enormous wealth, why aren't we transferring that wealth to having our workers, middle class, working class, working poor, paid better, right? And why aren't we given more leisure time? Remember in the 19th century, people were working 12, 14 hours, and we thought that was terrible. Well, by 1886 or so, there was already an eight-hour day movement. Why are we down to the six-hour day? We could do that. Except that we have this plutocracy, this rule of the rich, that demands that it accumulate billions and billions of dollars, way beyond what anybody could possibly spend on themselves to reward themselves for what we see as rewards under capitalism. Way beyond even, if you imagine this, because one of the things that wealth translates into power, you know, the concentration of wealth like we have now erodes any possibility of a democratic society. It's the golden rule, except not like we were talking about last hour. It's the he who has the gold rules. That's a plutocracy. So if you have millions, you can both buy everything you need for yourself and as well as politicians. So you can control the political system. You can control the economy. You can even control the cultural apparatus with millions. But there are people here that are, you know, parked with billions. Why do they have that? What do they do with it? And why do they want more? Like this family, that are the Waltons, that own Walmart. These people in Quebec decided they were going to unionize. Hey, terrible. So they closed the store. They closed the store. These are evil people. Extraordinarily evil people. Mean, nasty, cold-hearted people that don't want to just be stuck at like $8 an hour. They say, hey, Walmart's is the largest retailer in the world. It makes billions. The people that own it, the four kids, are multi-billionaires. Couldn't they afford maybe to give us like $11 an hour? Actually, they could afford to give them $40 an hour. Wouldn't even touch their fortune. But they're just these grasping, hard-nosed people that shouldn't have money. I mean, they didn't earn it anyway. This was all given to them. I mean, people say, well, they earned it. They earned their millions. Hey, you know, you have somebody that's the head of a company, and they say, well, he's a multimillionaire. Yeah, you can't do it without the janitor. Because the guy in the $5,000 suit wearing the $15,000 Rolex, I mean, if he doesn't have a janitor, he can't walk through his office because there's so much trash in the hallway. So it's part of a collective process. And under capitalism, we reward people differently. But why should we reward them so with such disparity? So we have hundreds of thousands of homeless people in this country. So that we have here this article I'm looking at. The further hemorrhaging of Detroit, city to shut 34 schools. The mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, outlining a sweeping plan to cut jobs, cut pay, and cut benefits for city employees, reduce city services, and increase taxes targeting working families and small businesses. And this is, I mean, I don't have much good to say about Kwame Kilpatrick, but this isn't because he's like a bad mayor. It's because the economic situation in the wealthiest country in the world in this urban setting is so desperate that rather than expanding what we have as a people, as a nation, as a community, we're cutting back. And all the while, the Waltons are closing a store rather than let people unionize. This is the 19th century. So then you have these millionaires in the Senate who are debating whether to give the poor $1.10 more an hour. See, what would that be over the another $40, another $44? Hey, how cool. Well, you know, I have a colleague in talk radio that always, every once an hour, he says, have I told you tonight how much I hate these people? Oh, yeah, I'll do this in a minute. I've got a little blip about Jack Kerouac, the beat writer. Actually, you can go to jackkerouac.com. His birthday is March 12th. KEROUAC.com. jackkerouac.com. I'll play that in a minute. I've been talking too long. Let me get some of you on the air. His gym in Brownstown. Hey, Jim, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up? Basically, there's a lot of reasons for prayer, I would say. Pray, you know, for having leaders that are competent. You know, I would pray for the poor in spirit. There's a lot of reasons to pray. And I think people need to look at the Bible and they need to pray. And that's my view.
Well, I mean, I appreciate your view, but if we've gotten down to the point where rather than having material political control over our leaders and instead have to pray that they're not a pack of crooks and warmongers like they are, I think we're in bad trouble. And how come then people pray and such bad things happen?
Well, because they pray on the bad things. They pray that bad things happen. That's why.
Whoa. Who's doing that, man?
I believe they, because a lot of people take the Bible and they look at all the negative stuff, the pestilence, the disease and everything, and they try to create that kind of environment. You know what I mean?
Black magic.
Yeah. Witchcraft and all that.
Yeah, know? Yeah. Well, yeah, witchcraft, I don't think people do that. I mean, the Wiccas, another persecuted religious minority in this country as well, they're usually pretty decent people. You know, they're in the pagan tradition, and nothing wrong with paganism. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Jim. I still haven't gotten this phone system down completely. That's why I'm always mumbling. Here's Mary in Southgate. Mary, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Oh, wait a minute, Mary. Hi, go ahead.
Marcy.
What is? Oh, Marcy.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. I'm just, you know, I live in Southgate. The RIF was out at this Harley Davidson thing. Did you know about that?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, RIF is out of sight, you know, it's really a great station. But anyway, so, like, I just wanted to talk a little bit, I'm not an atheist. Okay, I do believe in God. I got saved a while back and everything, but, you know, now, I don't even go to church anymore. I spent years in the church. And there was stuff going on back then that shouldn't have been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm not even in the church because of the BS that's going on in the church. So I don't even want to be a part of it. Not that I don't have my faith in God and all that, but, you know, as far as the Ten Commandments in the White House, they're trying to abolish that, you know, whatever they're trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe that you should force any religion on anybody.
Well,
you know,
right.
Right. So what, you know, you have a right to believe whatever you want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the House claims, you know, in God, we trust their Christian God. You know, if they believe so much in a Christian God and how this nation, well, the forefathers, Washington, and, you know, this nation was founded on a Christian God, but look where we are now. A bunch of greedy-ass, I mean, excuse me.
That's all right. We're all adults up now.
Is it okay to swear?
No. But
no,
it's,
okay, well, then I won't.
Okay.
But the greed and is just gone. So, I mean, the greed. I mean, the, you know, and the money, and they're still claiming to believe in a God that, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I do indeed. There's just tons of hypocrisy out there, What I judge people by are their acts in the world, not their public profession of their piety or the fact that they want to slap up symbols of religion everywhere. In fact, it seems almost inversely proportional. You know, like the more expression of public religiosity there is, the more corrupt and greedy people are.
Yeah, you can't force any religion on anybody. Everybody has a right. Even Christ, when he walked on earth, he did not force himself on anybody.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
I do indeed. Marcy, thank you very much. Appreciate your call and your ideas. Thanks for having joined us. Let's go to John in Ann Arbor. John, thanks for your patience. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hello, Peter.
Hi.
I've been listening to you, on and off for a little while, and it just seems like you have a lot of animosity towards the Christian religion. I'm just wondering, I mean, the whole idea behind religion is a positive message and of, you know, being saved and having a life and everything. Why do you have such a negative attitude towards something that's supposed to be positive?
Well, if you look across the history of the world and the world's religion, it's not exactly a pretty picture, is it?
Well, I mean, there have been, you know, I mean, for example, the Crusades. And
a few little glitches here and there, yeah.
I mean, but we're all human. We all have our, you know, faults, and, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Christianity or any other type of, you know, situation is perfect. But why do you have such a negative attitude? It seems like you are completely against something, and you are, like, preaching against Christianity, whereas if I, you know...
I'm talking about the attempt of a small minority of Christians who are actually right-wingers who are attempting to assert one particular brand of Christianity, like in this Ten Commandments, the display of the Ten Commandments. There's lots of, you know, there's like at least three versions of the Ten Commandments, and they're trying to force the King James Protestant version of it in public. And that's exactly what causes religious strife. And you say, well, what do you think? They're going to put up Ten Commandments in a courthouse, and all of a sudden it's going to be like Northern Ireland, or it's going to be like Iraq with Sunnis and Shias? The founding fathers wanted a separation of church and state because they had come from Europe, where they knew that the marriage of the two powerful institutions of religion and the state corrupted both and wound up to be oppressive. So the only thing I'm saying is, keep religion out of a public life in the sense, I mean, if people can get on the Emmys and say, I want to thank Jesus and all that, I don't care about that. But I'm talking about when the government gives its impromptu of affirmation. That's no. And it doesn't work. For one thing, it does absolutely nothing. Like I was saying earlier, this serial killer, the BLT or whatever the hell his name is, I mean, this guy was just elected to the church council.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I mean, there's no question. There's a lot of hypocrisy out there, but that is the minority. Most of the people, like 90% of the people, I'm not exactly sure, you know, what the exact percentage is, but most people believe in God in one way or the other, or some sense of a higher power. And I agree with you. I mean, it's been, you know, proved. I'm not exactly sure when it was. I think it was maybe in the 15th or 16th century, in which there was an agreement between the church and the Catholic Church and the state.
That was way earlier than that. I mean, early Christianity was a messianic religion that saw that the last days would soon be upon humanity. But instead, there was I'm forgetting all my Augustine cut a deal with the Roman Emperor Constantine to make Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire, and which then turned it into a huge bureaucracy.
Yeah, well, it could be a bureaucracy, but it could also be a good thing. But all I'm asking you, I mean, you know, and I'm not saying that no one's perfect, you know. But I mean, let me briefly state something. If you were talking, the thing that really kind of gets me is if I was talking about something like, you know, something that you might be, you know, a bit tolerant of, if not actually, you know, actually believing it, something like gay rights or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. If I was completely bashing gay rights, saying they're all a bunch of slobbering.
All right, I get your point. Then what?
Okay. So why are you doing that to?
Oh, our religion. I mean, I was trying to make the distinction between people that essentially use religion politically. That's what happens when you join it with the state. That, I mean, the Christians I know, I mean, I just know actually two separate groups of Christians that don't even know each other that their churches have spent time having conferences about how to be more sensitive as Christians towards gays and gay rights. All right? However, when Christianity is used as a club to discriminate against people because of the basis of their, their sexual identity, well, then it becomes not a source of salvation. It is not a source of compassion or unity within our community, but rather it's divisive and just a vehicle for people's prejudice. And that's what I object to. And if you said to me 90% of all Christians were compassionate, and you know what? Actually, I would probably suggest that most Christians are no different than anyone else, whether they're atheists or Jews or Buddhists or whatever. And there's probably a range of good people and bad people. But unfortunately, in this era, Christianity has been used by the right wing as a manner in which it can achieve social and political and economic dominance. And for that, it should be heartily condemned and kept out of the public sphere, because that's where they're attempting to wield this power that they see, at least I would say hypocritically see, in religion. All right, I got to go. Thank you. Should I do this right now? All right, let me just take this. Okay, yeah, Elliot. Oh, Elliot, God, you've been waiting so long. Thank you. You're on the air right now.
Hi.
Hi.
Peter, I was listening in just now, and I, you know, as far as, I didn't really want to talk about religion. I kind of want to get more into, politics, what you were discussing
sure.
earlier.
Sure, go ahead.
There was a quote. I read it someplace. I don't remember who said it, but the quote stuck with me, and the quote was, every country has the government that it deserves.
Boo.
And I think that it has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, just things have been happening a lot lately because the people haven't gotten organized, and the people haven't just really stood up, really subtle or just really angry, it doesn't matter. Just as you know, I think organization is the key, and the people just haven't done that, you know. And when you look back from the time that it began with Bush, you know, it was controversial. I mean, he won the election that was just, you know, it was ridiculous, you know, and that was the beginning, you know, and it's been bad.
You mean in 2004 or 2000?
2000.
Well, that, we didn't win the election, he stole
right.
the election.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he is just, but if you think about all the things that he's gotten away with, you know, it's like, I think the average liberal or at least the average Democrat would probably start to think, you know what, he's gotten away with so much and we have been able to do so little. You know, I think that a lot of the reasons why he's been able to get away with it and to get reelected, how he did that, I don't know. I think it has to do with people just are starting to kind of lose hope a little bit.
Well, I think there's a lot of that, and I think that the people that have power, they often see, they look at the people that they're ruling, and they're looking at the people that they take advantage of and the people that they dominate, and they say, what's the response?
Right.
And if we don't come up with much of a response, they go, well, what the hell?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And I was thinking, I was just a couple places over the weekend with people of high school age and college age. And these were political activists. They were involved in a lot of things. And they were just so filled with life. And if you see, like, documentaries about the civil rights movement of the 1960s or the anti-war movement of the 1960s, the passion that these young people had at the time and the belief that they could actually alter things is really, I'm trying to think of another word other than heartening, but that'll do. But I was thinking of this phrase that if people don't involve themselves, and particularly young people, in the affairs of this society and don't understand that we're at this critical juncture right now where there's this right-wing reactionary movement going on that wants to totally alter the nature of this country, if they don't involve themselves in this, they're in their 20s now. When they're in their 50s, they'll look back on their 20s and think, gee, the most exciting thing in my life at that time was my cell phone.
Right. Right.
That I can download MP3 files onto my cell phone. That'll be what youth is about, rather than this incredible, engaged, compassionate, vibrant life that is possible.
Right, and really just, you know, trying to make a difference. And also, you know, it's not just from Bush, from this, you know, from 2000 on. I mean, you know, we've had, you know, the opportunity to just learn our lesson from Vietnam, you know, which my father fought in, and just, you know, also just looking at how Bush conducts his, his campaign for the reelection was a good example of that. When people tried to stand up and really throw out a good, you know, a tough question, and they would be like escorted out.
Sure.
You know, and then also people who weren't supporting him weren't even allowed to go in, whether they had tickets or not. You know, and it's just, I mean, just to see how he conducts himself and how you, how average citizens can't even practice their First Amendment rights in his presence.
Now, I know, and on this, on trying to sell the American people on this absolutely catastrophically insane idea that we could you know, cut taxes during a time of war. No country's done that in the history of civilization. Go into debt and then have private financing of Social Security accounts. And then I'm reading this one account here. It says War Room, part of Bush Social Security push. And so there's a new Social Security War Room inside the Treasury Department. The internal taxpayer-funded campaigning is backed up by television advertisements, organizing and lobbying from business and other groups that support the Bush plan. So you and I are paying for this far right-wing Bush plan to destroy Social Security. And believe it, they don't want to just strengthen it. They want to eliminate it. Those young Republicans that were chanting in Pennsylvania that I mentioned last week, that were saying, you know, hey, hey, ho, ho, Social Security has got to go. They want to return us to the 19th century, although they're so stupid. I mean, they think, oh, well, I'm going to be on the high side of things. You never can tell. All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate your call. Hey, let me see. I think we just have, let me look at the time. Yeah, I wanted to do that. This is Mojo Nixon, and Mojo Nixon is talking about Jack Kerouac, the great beat writer who wrote On the Road, the book that influenced literature and actually a whole generation. It was published in the late 1950s, but and this is just a minute or two long. Mojo Nixon is pretty incredible, so let's take a listen.
Mojo Nixon broadcasting from the Shack by the Sea in Coronado, California, outlaw country. Friends, I know it's cold where you are. Oh, I know you're freezing your ass off and there's nothing on TV. You know what you might do? You might read a good book. On a cold winter night, you might sit down with a good book. You only read one book, the one book you got to read. On the Road by Jack Kerouac. Friends, it was on this date in 1957. That's the birth of cool. The beginning of beatnik. The nasty note from the underground that blows the puny minds of all the petty bourgeoisie in Squaresville. Man, On the Road is a wild, crazy, free, liberating book about sex, cars, jazz, drugs, truth, friendship, and America. Two psychic outlaws on the go reading Henry Miller and Mad Magazine, iconoclastic nonconformist hipsters who refuse to be squashed by the man and forced to smoke the devil's pole. Read On the Road and feel alive. Read On the Road and feel the wanderlust of the wide open American frontier. Read On the Road and know that we are all uncouth delinquents, ruffians, roustabouts, and hoodlums. Hopped up on goofballs and revolution and ready to open the doors of perception, my friend. On the Road changes everything. The monster is unleashed. The hollering homosexual Hebrew Allen Ginsberg writes how. The gonzo beat poem of all time that begins, I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving hysterical naked upon Negro streets at dawn. William Burroughs writes Naked Lunch, which leads to Charles Bukowski and Tom Waits drinking in some dive bar downtown L.A. Lawrence Ferlinghetti's Coney Island States of Mind infects Ken Kesey, Tom Wolfe, and Hunter S. Thompson. Lenny Bruce brings forth Richard Pryor, who begets Bill Hicks, who spawns Chris Rock. On the road, single-handedly leads to the Beatles taking acid at Cary Grant's house, and Abbie Hoffman raining money from the balcony of the New York Stock Exchange. Charlie Parker and Thelonious Monk, Norman Mailer and Nick Toshes, the MC5 and the Clash, Jackson Pollock and Marlon Brando, Johnny Cash and David Allan Coe are all children of that frog Canadian Kerouac and his demented, delirious, and defiant book, On the Road. If you only read one book for the rest of your life, this is the book to read, my friends. If the mortgage and the man are sucking the life out of you like vampires of conformity, get some cool kicks and bust out of Nowheresville, cat, by laying some eyeballs down on that swinging gone great American novel, On the Road, Daddy-O.
That's Mojo Nixon on WRIF. Well, I mean, it's a book worth reading. He may have raised your expectations beyond what it'll deliver. I don't know, though. I've read it. I like a lot of Jack Kerouac. His birth date, March 12th. Let's take one more call. It's Sandy from Brooklyn, who's been waiting a long time. Hey, Sandy, it's Peter. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I'd like to read you one of my poster board signs.
Poster board signs?
Yep, it's regarding Martha Stewart, and I think it's important.
Okay, go ahead.
Martha Stewart, Democrat, is innocent, in my humble opinion. Stockbroker assistant Douglas Faneuil, who changed his original story under government immunity, lied, in my humble opinion. And as a sidelight, when George W. Bush gave his 2004 presidential election acceptance speech, he did it from Faneuil Hall.
Yeah.
For my TV set, Douglas Faneuil's last name, Faneuil Hall. Okay.
What do you say your poster board? What do you mean?
I mean, it's one of my many poster boards that I put on the back of my truck.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and I think it's important because I believe that the powers that be wanted to find out if they could frame, convict, and jail a prominent Democratic female, Martha Stewart, without a big public outcry, and they found out they could. And so guess what, Peter? If they can frame and convict Martha Stewart, they can frame and convict you, they can frame and convict me, and they can frame and convict all your listeners out there.
Hmm. Well, hopefully Martha will be... Some people have said that this is actually going to wind up to her benefit. You know, she's doing a couple of shows and all of that. But, yeah, no, I agree. I think she got a pretty much of a raw deal. All right, thank you, Sandy. We'll be right back.
This is the Riff's award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
It's back. This coming Friday and Saturday, the Ark and Ann Arbor presents...
Listing WRIF.com. It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns. Make your request. Win cool Riff gear and schmooze with the vibe. It's your all-request Riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P. On the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll. 101 WRIF. Riff. Rock.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
This is WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Sky.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
Panchero's Mexican Grill. Get yourself some. That's the sound of fresh dough being pressed into homemade tortillas. Panchero's builds your burrito by filling the homemade tortilla with fresh ingredients right before your eyes. Your choice of steak, spiced pork, chicken, or freshly grilled marinated vegetables. Add vegetarian beans, rice, Panchero's award-winning salsas, and fresh guacamole. Now that's a burrito. Fresh, delicious, and bursting with flavor. So grab the family or friends and get yourself some. Burritos made fresh at Panchero's Mexican Grill. Panchero's, it's good. Panchero's, it's fresh. Panchero's, it's for you. Get yourself some.
Come taste for yourself at the newest Panchero's location in Livonia at 6 Mile Road in Hagerty.
Lunchtime Rocks with the Doc.
You pick the Riff Rock.
You win the prizes.
It's the High Noon All Request Lunch Hour.
Weekdays at noon with the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell.
Only on 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
Out
Howdy, Metro Detroit. This is Biker Bob, and I'm coming to Motown in March to bring you the newest Harley Davidson experience.
Who's Biker Bob?
Oh, my gosh. It's
Biker Bob is coming to Detroit.
We want to thank Metro Detroit for making Motown Harley Davidson and Taylor the Great Lakes region's top dealership. And now we're proud to announce a bunch of cool new stuff, including our new name, Biker Bob's Harley Davidson.
Biker Bob's grand opening weekend is March 4th through 6th. All weekend, you can stop into Biker Bob's guest services desk to pick up your temporary tattoo. Send us a photo of you with a tattoo in a wild location. The top 10 wildest entries receive a $50 Biker Bob's Harley gift card. Entries and winners posted on www.bikerbobshd.com after March 10th. Friday, March 4th, bring your dingiest, oldest, well-loved Motown Harley t-shirt to exchange it for our special limited edition Biker Bob t-shirts while supplies last.
We're in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka. For more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web at www.bikerbobsharley.com. For a good time and a great ride, you'll be hanging out at Biker Bob's.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist. With the guy who lost control a long time ago. The Riff's All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock. With Meltdown, the big unit. Weekday nights at 9 on 101 WRIF. Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station.
Wealth and almost absolute political power at the expense of the middle class and below. So Bush is saying, oh, you know, he's this compassionate conservative. There's a White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives designed to help religious charities. Well, for one thing, they let me see if I can find this real. Remember he's saying that the they run up against a big mountain called bureaucracy. Bush reported that during his presidency, 10 federal agencies have created offices to deal with religious charities. Now, this is called bureaucracy, hello, and it means it's staffed with people and people are getting paid to do all this stuff. So what they're doing, they're expanding the government bureaucracy. So what's it all about? What's the second part of it? One is to shift wealth more and more away from the vast majority of American people to the ruling elite, the ruling class, the plutocracy, you know, the already wealthy. The second thing is to gain absolute political power. So politically, these people are fascists. They're authoritarian personalities. They have no capacity within their personalities to accept a pluralistic society. That is where great numbers of divergent opinions exist. So they want to eradicate, like any fascist does, they want to eradicate any contrary political opinion that would stand in their way of their goal of transferring all this wealth to the already wealthy. And they do it by all sorts of hooks and crooks. And one of the things they do, for instance, when they partly they're taking our tax dollars and giving it to these religious charities, it's to pay off their far right wing Christian supporters. So they say, so you're taking my tax dollars, your tax dollars, and they give it to these churches. These churches say, hey, cool, we supported George Bush, we're getting paid off. The other group that, or the other manner in which they function is they're giving it to a lot of inner city African American churches. Now, these churches are very frequently doing excellent work in their communities. And as life erodes economically, you know, it frays the most among the poor. And as all these government programs for food stamps and health and welfare and what have you begin to go away, and there's just nothing left for the poorest. And then we're talking about tens of millions of people. And if you say, oh, too bad, you know, they're just poor, you know, like that. We're talking about millions of kids, children, right, who are suffering under the Bush deficit and war budgets, where it all goes pay off foreign investors to keep the government running and to pay off Bush's wealthy friends that destroyed Iraq and are continuing to do so and that are going to rebuild it as well. There's this crying need in poor communities. But also the black community votes overwhelmingly up towards 2000, I think it was like 94%, and I think in the last election it was like 92%. What happens here is that there are a number of prominent black ministers who have said, hey, I need money for charitable programs in my community, and if the Republicans, who they know are a pack of racists and couldn't care less about inner city poor. If they're going to give us $1 million, what the hell? I'm going to be a Republican because I'm not getting anything from the Democrats, and nothing changes anyways. People just keep getting poorer in the big cities. And this isn't going to, you know, like, alter. It's not all of a sudden that, that you know, African-Americans are going to start voting overwhelmingly for the Republicans. But what these evil geniuses, you know, behind the dope in the White House know, like Karl Rove, that all you got to do is shift 2 or 3% of these votes. You can say, well, wait a minute. This is a guy that's actually giving taxpayer dollars to these religious institutions that are then, helping with poverty concerns. So that's what it's all about. It's political. It's not based on any compassion or anything like that. It's solely political to erode the power of the Democratic Party and their bases. I mean, that's why they want private schools, right? Because they want to destroy the teachers' unions, because that's a big base of the Democratic Party. And the other thing is just get more money for the wealthy. So there's not a decent thought in all of this. And you and I are paying it. It's our tax dollars. So whether Bush is setting up a war room, as they call it, to bring about this ruse around Social Security. Remember, Bush is the guy that told us there are weapons of mass destruction. And he absolutely knew it. And he had charts and drawings. And remember, how soon we forget? What the hell's his name? The ex-Secretary of State. That he had, Colin Powell, that he had all this proof that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Of course, there wasn't any. Now, there's another big crisis. It's Social Security. And it's all a lie. There's nothing wrong with Social Security. It needs more money. And it's going to need more money, like 2042 or something like that. And that can pretty simply be gained by taking off the cap on on the tax we pay, on the income tax we pay on our, for Social Security. And all of a sudden, we would have billions of dollars more in it. It's that easy. So there's no problem. There's no real problem. Things have to be tinkered with every once in a while. It'd be like if all of a sudden you had a, you looked at your credit card bill and it said $1,500. You go, whoa. Someone might say, yo, $1,500, man, you got a problem. And you go, oh, it's okay. I've got, $2,000 coming in right now. And even if it, in the future I have a problem, I'm expecting a raise. And so, even though it looks like a big sum, I can take care of it. Same thing's true with Social Security. It's just a monstrous lie, another monstrous lie that Bushko is floating. All right. Whew. Boy, let me take another call. Jay Hudson, you got to tell me which call to take, or you can just point to it. Okay. Here's Chris from Pinckney. Chris, Peter Werby, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter. Oh, man, these Christians. I mean, I used to be Christian and stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess I kind of unconverted myself because it wasn't really working out for me. But man, these right wing Christian people, it's insane. Like, you can't talk to them about anything. I'm talking to this one guy about gay marriage and stuff.
Yeah.
And man, he just can't reason. It's like, oh yeah, well, you know, God says there's no gay marriage and stuff. I say it's discrimination. It's discrimination is what it comes down to, treating these people like they're lesser people.
What do they say? I mean, obviously, that's the case. I mean, they say that there's some inherent flaw in people's choices that are absolutely none of their business.
I don't get it. I've heard random arguments. Like, I've heard one argument, oh, yeah, well, it's not that people want gay marriage banned, it's that they don't see any reason for it to be allowed. I see a reason for it to be allowed, because if you don't allow it, it's discrimination.
Well, sure. Why shouldn't everyone have equal standing in this society? It doesn't. You know, this is like the South in the 50s or something like that. I mean, we're going to have to just pull these people kicking and screaming, get them over their prejudices, tell them to take care of their own life, get their nose out of other people's business, forget about sexuality, stop, I don't know. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Hi, it's Paul in Plymouth. Paul, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter. I have a couple comments, starting one with Social Security. And you're right, there really isn't a real problem at the moment. It's really more of just a distraction the president is putting forward to get around some of the bigger issues that are out there concerning the United States. But I do want to – I am kind of upset about the Democrats not responding to his – this problem that he's created and a real solution for it. I'd like a lot of your listeners to know that there's a cap on Social Security, on what you can pay into the Social Security system,
right,
which is $90,000. If you make $90,000, anything over that is not taxable. So someone who makes $1 million doesn't pay their fair share, or even anyone above $90,000. If we simply remove the cap, we'd be good for generations to come.
Sure. So there really is no problem. Or the other thing you could do as well is simply repeal all these tax breaks for the rich. You know, 3 years ago or so, everybody was calling this program and saying, why are you against the Bush tax cut? We're going to get so much money back. And I've, a couple of times over the last few years, I've said to people, tell me about all the tax relief that you've gotten as a middle class or working class person. And it amounts to next to nothing.
Right. Can I mention one more thing?
Sure.
Before I mention that, it'd be nice to get the when you're on hold to get your show back up in the phone.
You can't hear it while you're on hold?
No.
Okay. All right. There's something else. Show not on hold. I will talk to our engineer.
But I want to mention about Detroit Public Schools and
sure.
the problems they're having. There's a local man in our community who used to own the Thompson McCauley Paving Corporation. And he sold the corporation several years ago for $500 million. And he offered the city of Detroit $200 million to rebuild elementaries, middle schools, and high schools for them. And the city of Detroit turned it down. And this man, just simply out of the generosity of his heart, said, hey, I got so much of this money, I want to help out a school system that needs this influx of cash.
He was going to donate $200
million? $200
million.
You can look it up. It's factual. But no one's talking about it. I would really hope that the situation that the Detroiters are finding themselves in today with their debt and their budget, you know, over being over $200 million just there, that they would maybe reconsider taking this man's $200 million.
Well, it doesn't sound like a bad idea. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate your call. Here's Pete from Imlay City. Pete, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Doing good.
I just got a comment about what you were talking about, you know, possibly having a shorter work week and that. I just think that they will never have it that way because that will give too much time for people to actually sit down and have dinner with their family because their wife's not at work and that to afford their house. And I think they would start to question where their tax dollars are going and would probably, you know, demand answers from the government.
Well,
what's going on with their money?
Well, see, one of the things asking or depending on their generosity is never going to happen. I mean, the only way that there's ever been social change in this country is by masses of people constituting a movement that says we got to have the 8-hour day, or we got to have women's votes, or we got to have an end to segregation, or we got to have an end to a war. Left to their own devices, the rulers generally operate in a pretty mean manner, both domestically and internationally. I mean, if you think about it, think about the 19th century, or think about, well, forget like our grandparents or something, you know, from the 1930s. The bosses, the owners, had the police and National Guard of this country kill over 300 American workers in the decade of the 30s who were trying to unionize. So, I mean, you know, famous cases in Chicago, 1938, the Chicago police just shot into this picnic of family working union families, shooting women in the back and what have you. I mean, that wasn't unusual. So they, they're never going to do anything just because it's the right thing to do. I mean, we have to demand it, and unfortunately, there's always been casualties along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be great if we could organize something and just, you know.
Well, we got to do it. Remember, I was saying earlier that particularly for people in their teens and their 20s, but that goes for all of us, no matter how old we are. When we look back on our lives, is it going to be something where we really made history? I don't know if this is a clear way to put it or not, but you can either be an object of history. That is where decisions are made and you have no part of them and you're just an object to be acted upon, or do you become the subject of history and make history? And you think, whoa, that's a pretty tall order. I'm just an ordinary guy or gal. You know, how the hell am I going to make history? Well, I mean, I think one of the best books to read is Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, where he shows that whereas we always ascribe change to great men, that generally there's a large social movement that, that has pushed along everything that we say is good about this country. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. I'm just going to take this one more call right here and then go to our spots and our interviews. Hi, it's Peter. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I was going to just make a comment about Jack Kerouac and On the Road.
Sure, the book, yeah.
Yeah. I've read it. I think it's one of the most interesting books that I've ever read because of the way that it's written in. It's unlike most other books that I've ever read.
Yeah.
In the whole stream of consciousness. I think it's worth knowing, like, he wrote the entire thing over the course of, I believe it was 20 straight days, using stimulants to stay awake, and he wrote it on, like, what was like adding machine paper, as in, like, a roll of paper.
It was on one continuous roll, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's something that is worthwhile for almost everyone to read, because it's, like, it's because it's not really of any conventional literary quality, as in what's, like, taught in most school English classes.
You think so? You know, actually, it was edited quite extensively, and it reads like a pretty coherent novel, don't you think?
No, I don't mean that, in that it doesn't have the traditional literary structure.
Well, yeah, it didn't, and that's why it was...
of how it's written, but I think it's one of the more interesting books that I've ever read, and I think that it also offers a lot of explanation for the entire hippie generation, like, because the entire degeneration, like, that almost epitomizes it, and I think that that is one of the most interesting and unusual pieces of literature that I've ever read, and it also helps if you have some background knowledge of it, like reading things like, or knowing who Allen Ginsberg is and some of his poetry, and reading some of something like what Norman Mailer has written.
Yeah, well, if you think about the three legs in terms of the most prominent writing of the Beat authors, On the Road by Kerouac, the poem Howl by Ginsberg, and Naked Lunch by William Burroughs, you've got a mind full of stuff. Yeah, I got to go. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being our last caller. So stay tuned. We've got interviews with two people that are going to be appearing in the Detroit and Ann Arbor area this coming week. And you can check all that out. Go to my website if you'd like, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com, and go to the calendar that's over on the left. All right, so stay tuned.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe on 101 WRIF Detroit. Peter will be back right after this.
Hi, this is Screaming Scott Randall from 101 WRIF.
You're listening to WRIF.com. It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
With the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock. With Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9.
On 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station.
Poncheros Mexican Grill. Get yourself some. That's the sound of fresh dough being pressed into homemade tortillas.
Poncheros builds your burrito by filling the homemade tortilla with fresh ingredients right before your eyes. Your choice of steak, spiced pork, chicken, or freshly grilled marinated vegetables. Add vegetarian beans, rice, Poncheros award-winning salsas, and fresh guacamole. Now that's a burrito. Fresh, delicious, and bursting with flavor. So grab the family or friends and get yourself some. Burritos made fresh at Poncheros Mexican Grill. Poncheros, it's good. Poncheros, it's fresh. Poncheros, it's for you. Get yourself some.
Come taste for yourself at the newest Poncheros location in Livonia at 6 Mile Road in Hagerty. RIF.com. Anglers, get ready to cast your line for a big money this year because the WRIF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of four tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the four tournament series will also win $1,500 cash plus the title of 2005 WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the RIF. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRIF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. Two to three person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
Lunchtime Rocks with the Doc.
You pick the Riff Rock.
You win the prizes.
It's the High Noon All Request Lunch Hour.
Weekdays at noon with the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell.
Only on 101 WRIF.
Hi, boys. Where do you go to get your hair cut? Are you still going to the same old boring barber shop or the overpriced salon?
Well, it's time for a change of scenery because Lady Jane's has just opened new shops in Novi and Troy. Get your haircut at a guy's place. No women, no children allowed. And we make getting your haircut fun.
Lady Jane's new Novi and Troy locations have only the finest all-female staff, ensuring a pleasurable experience. Not to be confused with a regular salon, this is a guy's place with your own TV at every station and the personal service that you deserve.
So sit back and enjoy the scenery, and we'll be glad to take care of you.
For their grand opening, Lady Jane's Barbershop in Troy and Novi have haircuts for only $10. That's right, haircuts are only $10 for the entire month of March. No appointment is necessary. Visit Lady Jane's new location in Troy on Rochester Road just north of Big Beaver, or on 10 Mile in Novi for this March special.
At Lady Jane's, we'll treat you right.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll.
101
The Riff.
The Riff.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Make your request.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the Dubai.
It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
On the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF. Riff.
Rock.
Lead up to the invasion and covering the occupation, it continues to act as a megaphone for those in power. It continues to do what we're not supposed to do. There's a reason why our profession, journalism, was explicitly protected, the only profession explicitly protected by the Constitution, because we're supposed to hold the government, we're supposed to hold those in power accountable, we're supposed to be the check and balance on government. And instead, we see the continued forum the media provides for those who are officials. The media is supposed to be there for everyone. It continues to beat the drums for war. I mean, before the invasion, the media amplified the administration's false allegations that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Afterwards, the same people who got it wrong so much wring their hands and say, how do we get it wrong? Why not have some of those on who got it right? We're talking about not only the conventional peace movement, but we're talking about those high up in intelligence and the military who were saying that the evidence just didn't add up. And then you have the new administration of George Bush, for example, the elevation, the promotion of Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General. He is the person, as White House counsel, who laid the legal groundwork for the torture at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo by saying that the Geneva Conventions are quaint, that the Geneva Conventions don't apply. I think that most threatens U.S. servicemen and women. What if they are taken captive or prisoner somewhere? We certainly want to believe that they would be treated fairly, humanely. And when we have the model and the images we have of how prisoners have been treated, that is not a very reassuring picture of what will happen to U.S. soldiers. Now, the most important ones to deal with this are the retired generals and admirals who have been among the most vocal, saying Alberto Gonzalez is a threat to U.S. servicemen and women for this very reason. But in the end, the Democrats joined with Republicans, not all. There were a number of dissenting Democrats, and confirming him to the highest legal position in the land as Attorney General. The media hardly gives play to the images and the stories of the torture and the abuse proportionate to what they represent. And I think it's very important for people in this country to understand why people in other countries feel the way they do.
Well, Amy Goodman, I did say a little better. Now you can see I'm backpedaling some. But I was thinking, for instance, that there is a level of criticism that does eke through. I mean, some of the headlines on your site, democracynow.org or buzzflash.com or Common Dreams.
Well, you're not talking about the mainstream media.
Well, they pick up
the network.
I know, but they pick up stories. I'm thinking of the print media. They pick up stories. So, I mean, I'm not trying to make a brief for certainly.
Well, let me give you an example, Peter. Yesterday, the New York Times did cover the fact that the ACLU and Human Rights First, Human Rights Legal Organization, have filed suit against Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld over the torture, representing prisoners who have been tortured at Abu Ghraib. Now, if you're an avid reader of the New York Times and you say you didn't know this and you're feeling a little embarrassed that you didn't read it in the Times yesterday, it was there. Okay, we excuse you for missing it. It was on page A20, I can't remember the now, I think it was A22. I think they developed a new font for the headline. It might have been 2 inches, the article. And the headline itself, the print was smaller than the actual print in the article. I haven't even seen that before. But that's what we're talking about. I mean, that kind of stuff in other parts of the world gets a lot of attention because, let's face it, the U.S. is the most powerful country on earth, and it sets an example. And it's very important that, it's really a matter of life and death, and that example is a positive one. And we hardly see this proportionate to the effect that these people's behavior has, in the papers and on the network.
Sure, and that all goes, and I would say this to listeners, things don't just kind of haphazardly appear on page A22 or on page 1 or not at all. Someone's making those selections. So I think if my guest, Amy Goodman, and me, Peter Werby, were editing a daily newspaper, that could be a big banner headline on page 1 because it has some great significance. Who's making these decisions? You're not part of the mainstream media on democracy.
Well, I think that we actually represent the mainstream. I do have to say, I think we're talking now increasingly not about a fringe minority or a silent majority, but the silenced majority, silenced by the corporate media. And that very much has to change. And that's the important question. Who makes these decisions? There are a lot of really well-intentioned, hardworking, mainstream corporate journalists. But what they do doesn't necessarily get on the air in the form that they originally propose it.
Mm-hmm.
What matters is who owns the media. And this goes to a very important question in this country, is that we are now, we've entered an era of the largest media consolidation this country has ever seen. What matters is who owns the networks. I mean, you've got the Clear Channel stations. You've got the Clear Channeling of America, more than 1,200 radio stations owned by a single entity. And they have a very strong political point of view, very Bush-connected ownership, and during the war, pushing pro-war rallies. And we interviewed the South Carolina Broadcaster of the Year, who worked for her local Clear Channel station, and she has sued, and she has alleged that she was thrown off for expressing an anti-war point of view. I think that we need a media in this country that serves a democratic society, and it does matter who owns the media and how much they own. There was a recent decision, a very important one, a small radio project, the Prometheus Radio Project, which represents low-power FM stations, challenged the Goliaths, the huge media conglomerates, and the FCC by saying that they can't change the rules to allow media owners to own the radio, TV, and newspaper in a town. And the appeals court in Philadelphia has ruled against the big media giants and on behalf of the small media guys. And now the federal government has decided to drop the suit. And who's picked it up? Well, the large corporate networks like Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation. I think that there is a real fight back right now. I think people understand across the political spectrum that not to have these diverse forums, these diverse media, is a threat to our democracy, everyone from Trent Lott to Barbara Boxer. So I think that's very positive, and there's a very strong grassroots media movement forming in this country to fight the consolidation.
Well, Amy Goodman, you host a daily show, Democracy Now!, and it's on over 300 stations. So I don't think people would say this is I don't think this is a fringe operation, just as this show that we're broadcasting on now is not on a small fringe radio station, but a fairly prominent one here in the city of Detroit. Tell us some about Democracy Now! And what it takes to develop a daily radio and TV news program that's heard over 300 stations.
It's a few years ago, we were in a couple dozen radio stations. We expanded to television, and now the growth has been really explosive. 2 to 3 new stations a week pick us up. It can be a PBS station. It can be an NPR station, a community radio station, a community station, a public access TV station that some people aren't even aware of that we have in all of our communities. That's really been fought for by media activists. The cable company comes into town, digs up the roads for Comcast or for Time Warner, you know, for us to have cable, and they have to give back something because they have the monopoly, and that's a channel where we can make our own media. And if people don't use it, we're going to lose it, because when the cable companies renegotiate, they say, oh, you know, you don't need that channel unless there's a real constituency saying, hey, we watch it, we use it, we want to keep it. They will be lost. So media activism is very important. But Democracy Now! Has just taken off. In fact, we're hoping in the Detroit and Dearborn and Ann Arbor area where we're coming to speak on March 10th, radio and television will pick up the program. It's an amazing collaboration of media all over the country, and also bringing out grassroots voices like today, any of the days you can choose of Democracy Now! But, for example, when we hear about Syria, when was the last time in the network television you heard non-official Syrian citizens talking about what the Syria being in the crosshairs of the United States means? Now, I'm not talking about an apology for the Syrian regime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about speaking with people as we did in Damascus who've been imprisoned for years. I'm talking about speaking with people in Iran who have had demonstrations against the regime, but say that when this kind of belligerent approach of the U.S. government is taken, very militaristic, the first casualties of this are the grassroots pro-democracy movements on the ground. It's not that they support their regimes, but they are then classified in the sort of the same camp as the outside aggressor,
sure.
And they're the first ones to be cracked down on. It's so important that we hear the voices of people on the ground. I think that is the most informed and the way that we can then make decisions, because that's what this is all about, getting information, not being force-fed decisions, the position you should take, but you get information, and then you make your own decision, and then that makes you a responsible citizen of this country, participating in, and that's what makes democracy real.
You do have to have information. My guest is Amy Goodman on the Peter Werbe Show. She and her brother David are going to be in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan, Hutchins Hall. It's going to be Thursday, March 10th, coming up, room 100. It's on the corner of State and Monroe. The title of the talk is going to be Independent Media in a Time of War and Elections. Also, she, Amy, and her brother David Goodman are the authors of The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. And who's the publisher? I don't have it in front of me.
The publisher is Hyperion, and the book is just coming out in paperback now,
okay.
Which we're very excited about. And I really think it's a testament to the hunger for independent voices that it's become a national bestseller. We just came back from Britain and Spain and Italy. It's been translated into Italian and Spanish, so we're very excited. The Spanish edition is also out.
Let me ask you one thing. I just wanted to get back to Democracy Now! And what you present and how you present it. Many people see, I think most Americans see that there's a great failing in the corporate media, NBC, let's not even talk about Fox News. But many people, I think, would say, well, Democracy Now! Is kind of the Fox News of the left. It has an agenda. It has a specific point of view. Whereas particularly the networks, they're objective. They present everything. They don't present.
Well, no. I mean, I think that's entirely wrong. First of all, Fox should be condemned because it doesn't allow for real, honest debate. I mean, you've got these people who are screaming. If they put on people on the other side, it's to use them as dupes to scream at them. Democracy Now! Is nothing like that. I mean, presents different points of view and lets people talk them out. But more importantly, I think, you know, Fox is easy to criticize. But what you're raising, the issue of the mainstream or the corporate networks, there is I don't think it is even productive to talk about objectivity. I think everyone has a point of view, and that's just honest to talk about. But what our responsibility is to be fair and accurate. The networks do not just present everything. For example, in the lead up to the invasion, FAIR did a study of the 4 major nightly newscasts, NBC, ABC, CBS, and PBS NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, 2 weeks around Powell making that push for war at the UN, February 5th, 2003. There were 393 country interviews done, and only three were with anti-war representatives, three of almost 400. That is not a balanced media.
And besides, let me just interrupt you and say, besides being, as you indicated earlier, it's not just a matter of not being fair, but the anti-war sentiment in this country was expressed by tens of millions of people. It wasn't like it was some fringe little...
Oh, yeah. No, that's very important. At that point, in fact, the majority of people were opposed to war. They wanted more inspections and diplomacy. So the media went entirely in another direction. It really raises the question, if the media had it even been fair, you know, 50-50% both sides, many more people may well have heard an echo of their own voices and arguments and felt strongly. But we're still talking about more than half the people. That was not a fringe position at all to be opposed to war. And I think one of the most underreported stories is the level of resistance in the military. Close to 6,000 people who have refused to go back or refused to go to Iraq, young people in the military. It's not an often told story. The fact that there are people being held in jails and military brigs around the country who have refused to serve. Camilo Mejia, a Florida National Guardsman, went, came back, and didn't want to go back because he said he didn't want to participate in the abuse. And he wasn't even talking about Abu Ghraib, but at another detention facility. And he said he testified before Congress. Instead, he was sent to jail. And he just got out almost after almost a year. And he says he feels what he did was right. He acted his conscience, and there are many young people. And yet we hardly hear or see coverage of that. You know, you might point out the occasional story. I recommend, by the way, Kathy Dobie's piece in Harper's Magazine is great about those that resist. And on Democracy Now!, we cover it all the time. In fact, we wrote about it in The Exception to the Rulers. You might see the occasional story, but what you don't see is the drumbeat coverage, the way it goes the other way, which is in favor of war.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's worth maybe retelling. You may have even told this the last time you were a guest on this show, Amy Goodman, because what I get on when I do like talk shows, people say, "Oh, you know, you're just talking about me, a hack for the Democratic Party," and they say, "Your boy Clinton." Recount to us your on Democracy Now! Your discussion with Bill Clinton. I think that's worth retelling.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone would accuse me of, you know, of being in cahoots with my boy Clinton, as Clinton called me hostile, combative, and even disrespectful. But he called in on Election Day 2000 when he was president. He was trying to get people out to vote. And I didn't know he was going to call in. They called, said White House Communications was on the line, and I had thought they said White Horse Communications, which is a tavern in Greenwich Village. And I thought, what are they calling me at 9 o'clock in the morning? They said, the president wants to speak to you. And I said, the president of what? I mean, this is a tavern. And they said, the president of the United States. So anyway, I didn't quite believe it, and he didn't call during the show. But right afterwards, as we were walking out to get coffee for the long election day of 2000, someone yelled, "Actually, the president is on the phone." And we raced in, sat down, and asked a series of questions. It was President Clinton. We asked him about racial profiling, because Al Gore had said that it would be his first act in office was to outlaw racial profiling. Well, they've been in office for 8 years. Why hadn't they done it then? But I started by saying, you know, if he was calling to get people out to vote, many people felt that the parties were just really captured by the corporations, and why does one vote make a difference? And he responded to that. I asked him about Leonard Peltier, who's in prison, Native American leader, if he'd be granting him clemency, because that was something he was considering at the time. And asked him about many issues, the death penalty and the bombing of Vieques, asked him about Iraq as well. And it was a good, you know, half hour. And the next day I got a call from the White House basically threatening me, saying that I wouldn't be welcome at the White House anymore, that I'd broken the rules. And I said, what rules? I mean, he called me. I didn't call him. And they said that he wanted to talk about getting out the vote. And I said, well, that may be what he wanted to talk about, but, you know, I'm a journalist. I didn't agree to a set of questions. And while I had the opportunity, though I did ask him about that, I asked him about some other pressing issues as well. They said that other stations had just kept him on for 2 to 3 minutes, and I had kept him on for a half hour. I said, for God's sakes, he's the most powerful man on earth. He can hang up if he wants to. I think what they're responding to is this attitude of journalists is basically to be on bended knee, as if the political leaders are royalty. It's our job not to be in a comfortable, cozy position with those in power, but to hold them accountable. And I just thought I was doing my job.
Well, I was going to say, so many people that have heard that account of your, I almost call it a confrontation with Bill Clinton, say, you know, Amy Goodman is so tough, she's so willing to go right in someone's face. And as you said, you're just doing what should be done by every single journalist that steps into those White House briefings or those press conferences.
That's right. I mean, that's what our job is just to ask the questions. We're not there as cheerleaders for the different parties, to party with the parties. We're outside of all that. And, you know, that's what being a journalist sounds like.
All right. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left. And, you know, there is the election of George Bush. I don't know if I want to call it the re-election, but the election of George Bush in 2004 just absolutely took the wind out of the sails of so many people to the left of the Republicans, and saying this whole country is in the grasp of these right-wing religious fanatics, that they control all the institutions, they control the media, it's all hopeless. And for one thing, I mean, I try to keep reminding people that George Bush, what was his vote total? I think 50.29%. So statistically, it was a dead heat. But so many people on the left just act like it was 1972 or something.
It is interesting to look back at 1972, you know, right? Richard Nixon swept one country, one state, Massachusetts is the only one he didn't get. McGovern, you know, lost in a landslide, yet it was the height of the Vietnam War, and the height of the power of the anti-Vietnam War movement. And look what happened, yet 2 years later, Nixon was out. And I really do think long-term movements matter. And we don't really know what happened on Election Day. I think it's not only about the lack of verifiability of these elections, as increasingly we turn to computerized voting and not having a paper trail. You have to really ask a question why we don't. I mean, countries like Venezuela just had an election. You get a little sort of like a movie stub, and you put it like a ticket, you put it in a box, and then they can do random samples, compare what's in the box to the particular voting machine so that people don't be suspicious. We don't have that in this country, which is ludicrous. But it's not only about what happened on Election Day. It's in the lead up to Election Day, the level of intimidation and harassment, and then, of course, on Election Day, people not having voting machines. It's certainly not a re-election because Bush wasn't elected in 2000. This time around, he is president, but still we have an extremely low rate of voting. Everyone said this is fantastic because, like, somewhere almost 60% of people turned out, which means Bush got about 30% of the vote. This is hardly something to applaud. I think people feel inspired when there is a true position staked out that is different than the person who is in power. I think John Kerry has to be held responsible for not being that opposition candidate, that he ran for the same Bush base that Bush did. And he made a fatal calculation that everyone to the left of that would have nowhere to go but vote for him. But they do, and mm-hmm. that is not to vote. And you have to inspire people, galvanize people, mobilize people with a true alternative. He voted to authorize the invasion, as did his running mate and John Edwards. And when he was asked, you know, maybe you'd say he was duped by the evidence, so-called evidence of weapons of mass destruction, but after we learned there wasn't, when he was asked what he'd do now, what he'd do then if he knew what he knows now, he said he would still vote to authorize. So people were really scratching their heads, and it opened up to ridicule by the Republicans. And so, what are you complaining about? What are you running against? And that's a fair question.
Yeah, my wife and I were walking yesterday, and I saw a bumper sticker that said, Kerry sucks less. And I'm thinking, that's why he lost. Hey, we're We're completely out of time, and we've just, as usual, scratched the surface. A couple things you can do, maybe three. Go to democracynow.org. It's also linked to my website, peterwerby.com, but you can go directly there, democracynow.org. You can listen to it every day online, as I very frequently do. You can get the book by Amy Goodman and her brother David, The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. It's published by Hyperion, and I'll have that as a link on my site as well. And best of all, Amy and David Goodman will be speaking Thursday, March 10th, University of Michigan, Hutchins Hall, Room 100, State and Monroe are the streets. Independent media in a time of war and elections is also a new documentary of that name as well. Amy Goodman, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101.
Visiting WRIF.com.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Make your requests.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the Fuba.
It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
On the Motor City's one and only home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rock.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit ucmore.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
This is WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions, so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
Panchero's Mexican Grill. Get yourself some. That's the sound of fresh dough being pressed into homemade tortillas. Panchero's builds your burrito by filling the homemade tortilla with fresh ingredients right before your eyes. Your choice of steak, spiced pork, chicken, or freshly grilled marinated vegetables. Add vegetarian beans, rice, Panchero's award-winning salsas, and fresh guacamole. Now that's a burrito. Fresh, delicious, and bursting with flavor. So grab the family or friends and get yourself some. Burritos made fresh at Panchero's Mexican Grill. Panchero's, it's good. Panchero's, it's fresh. Panchero's, it's for you. Get yourself some.
Come taste for yourself at the newest Panchero's location in Livonia at 6 Mile Road in Hagerty.
Lunchtime Rocks with the Doc.
You pick the Riff Rock.
You win the prizes.
It's the High Noon All Request Lunch Hour.
Weekdays at noon with the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell.
Only on 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Rock Station.
Out in Metro Detroit, this is Biker Bob, and I'm coming to Motown in March to bring you the newest Harley-Davidson experience.
Who's Biker Bob?
Oh, my gosh, it's
Biker Bob is coming to Detroit.
We want to thank Metro Detroit for making Motown Harley-Davidson and Taylor the Great Lakes region's top dealership. And now we're proud to announce a bunch of cool new stuff, including our new name, Biker Bob's Harley-Davidson.
Biker Bob's grand opening weekend is March 4th through 6th. All weekend, you can stop into Biker Bob's guest services desk to pick up your temporary tattoo. Send us a photo of you with a tattoo in a wild location. The top 10 wildest entries receive a $50 Biker Bob's Harley gift card. Entries and winners posted on www.bikerbobshd.com after March 10th. Friday, March 4th, bring your dingiest, oldest, well-loved Motown Harley t-shirt to exchange it for our special limited edition Biker Bob t-shirts while supplies last.
We're in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka. For more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web at www.bikerbobsharley.com. For a good time and a great ride, you'll be hanging out at Biker Bob's.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
With the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riff's All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock. With Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9.
On 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station.
When it was clear the Iraqis wouldn't accept that, a plan was developed where Bremer would stay in as the viceroy for an indefinite period, like MacArthur in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
When the Iraqis said no way to that, they proposed this complex system of so-called caucuses, where essentially appointees of American appointees would appoint those who would write the Constitution and form the new government. It was only when Ayatollah Sistani sent hundreds of thousands of Shiites out into the street a year ago January demanding direct elections that the U.S. Finally gave in. And then, instead of having them in May, as Iraqis were demanding, we put it off and put it off until this past January, and by that time, the insurgency had gotten to a point where the important Sunni Arab minority was unable or unwilling to participate, and the government that coming to power, even though the victorious United Iraqi Alliance has one of their main platforms, calls for the withdrawal of American forces, the situation is such that they may have to keep American troops in the country for a while for their very survival.
Hmm. Now, let me play you the devil's advocate, which some of my listeners think I am in any event. But whatever. I mean, we've had this horrid dictatorship of Saddam Hussein for decades and decades. This is a halting, stumbling advance towards democracy. And sure, I mean, I don't know if this is the best example, but sure, it's not like the United States. But flawed as it is, it's an advance forward. And to not give Bush some credit for this is ideological. Let me say, I think that would be the argument.
Well, I mean, I could convince a student to do an assignment by hitting him over the head repeatedly until he agrees to do so, but that doesn't necessarily mean that was the only or the best way to go about it. If you look at how a real regime change has taken place in the Middle East and around the world, it's largely in recent decades, it's been through these largely nonviolent people power movements like what we saw recently in Ukraine, and we've seen from everything from the overthrow of Marcos in the Philippines to the downfall of communist regimes in Poland, East Germany, Czechoslovakia. The people of Serbia did in 48 hours what 11 weeks of NATO bombing could not do in throwing out Milosevic. Suharto in Indonesia, who had even more blood on his hands than Saddam Hussein, was similarly ousted just a few years ago in such movements. But unfortunately, the U.S. Policy of these draconian sanctions coming on the heels of the destruction of much of the civilian infrastructure, which annihilated the country's middle class, which is traditionally in the Arab world a force that worked for such social change, made it virtually impossible for the Iraqi people to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I've talked to many Iraqis who believe the U.S. had a very different policy over the past 15 years, and this is Republican and Democratic administrations. I'm not getting Clinton off the hook here in any sense. If we had a very different policy, I think we would have had a democratic or quasi-democratic, at least, transition in Iraq without the destruction and bloodshed and chaos and the very uncertain future that country now faces.
Now, Stephen Zunis, it's always occurred to me that there was a rush to war with the inspectors. This is, we're now talking in 2003, a rush to war on the part of the United States because it was going to become evident that there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Exactly, as many of us have predicted. You may remember on my show, I said exactly that I would be very surprised if they found any weapons of mass destruction, at least those that could be a threat to any of Iraq's neighbors, much less the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, and this was pure speculation on my point, I probably learn these things by reading stuff from people like you, but that the Saddam Hussein regime was beginning to totter, that there were so many internal contradictions, that it was so brittle, and that the fact that he had to allow these inspectors in successfully under threat of United Nations action, that it had they discovered, as they would have, that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that could have precipitated the pretty much nonviolent overthrow of Saddam. I mean, that's speculation, but does it make any sense?
Oh, yeah. It makes a lot of sense, and a number of people, not just myself, have argued similar things. The problem, I mean, the thing is that the United Nations-led efforts work. They had made the situation very fragile for the regime there, and it was and yet these threats of but by not allowing it to come as an organic process from the grassroots and having it come from the outside with guns and bombs and the like, we see the situation we're experiencing now. And what's striking, of course, about this the insurgents is that the vast majority of them were anti-Saddam Hussein forces. These were people who see us as foreign invaders and occupiers, not because they like the old regime at all, but because we are seen as occupiers. And I'm afraid if this is the message we're giving to the Arab world, that democracy comes from bombing, invasion, occupation, torturing have prisoners, 90% of whom were not even insurgents, but just rounded up in these grand sweeps of young men in neighborhoods, flattening cities like Fallujah. I mean, this is going to give a bad name to democracy, just as the way what the Soviet Union did in Eastern Europe and Afghanistan gave a bad name to socialism.
Now, I think that you realize, in fact, this is one of the things I think that both of us try to overcome, that for good numbers of American, history begins, if we're lucky, a week ago. So to talk about weapons of mass destruction and the possibilities doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people. They're in the constant now as defined by television and what they hear currently from a particular politician. So we're there. There's this incredible violence going on. There is this expenditure of tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars on our part as our country goes without. I'm glad you're not asking me this. What's the possibilities there? In many ways, it looks like Bush is damned if he does and damned if he doesn't.
It is a very, very difficult situation. It's very hard to see how we're going to get out of this one, and because it is a very difficult situation. The new government does not have sufficient armed forces to maintain order and to protect itself. Yet at the same time, if it's dependent on U.S. forces, it'll be seen by broad segments of the population as some kind of a puppet regime of a foreign occupying army. And similarly, we're finding ourselves in a situation where I believe, and indeed the statistics seem to bear this out, that we're creating insurgents faster than we can kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is a largely tribal society where vengeance is a highly regarded ethic. And given that, despite, I believe, the best efforts of the vast majority of our troops, the nature of counterinsurgency warfare, especially in crowded urban areas, is that a lot of innocent civilians get killed. And the survivors of these victims are very likely to end up supporting, to one degree or another, the insurgents. Indeed, every time an estimate comes out from the Pentagon about the numbers of these insurgents, it seems to grow and grow and grow. And only a tiny percentage, they believe, and well under 5%, are foreigners. This is a very difficult situation that it's going to be very hard to get out of.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Zunis is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. His book by Common Courage Press is Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism. He's going to be in Detroit Wednesday, March 9th. He's going to appear on the Wayne State University campus at the Alumni House at noon, and then later that evening at the Pleasant Ridge Community Center, 7:30 p.m. That's at 4 Ridge Road, where it dead ends at the I-696 wall. And then on the next day, Thursday, 8 p.m. in Ann Arbor, Stephen is where?
Yes, 8 o'clock at Ann Arbor in the Parker Room of the Michigan Student Union.
Okay. Now, I can see just by the clock, I thought I was going to try to split this equally, but Lebanon, suddenly here's an example of exactly what you were talking about earlier. People power out in the streets against all odds, and suddenly it's the thing about you can't stop an idea whose time has come. How do you look at what's happened in Lebanon over the last few days?
Well, it is really exciting. The opposition to the overbearing Syrian presence, which traditionally had been centered in the Maronite community, is now really going across ethnic and political lines in that country. The Syrian role is not literally an occupation, technically speaking, but it bears some analogies, in fact, to the Soviet role in Warsaw Pact countries, and that they allow the country, its independence and separate institutions, but they have quite a bit of control around government policies and the like. And the Lebanese are getting really, really tired of it. And it's inspiring to see the people resist along these levels. It's interesting, though, however, how the United States has, which initially supported Syria's intervention in 1976, and as recently as 1990, gave the green light to Syria to oust the unpopular Iraqi-backed government of General Michel Aoun, is now really focusing on Syria's ongoing violations of UN Security Council Resolution 1559, calling for Syrian foreign forces to pull out of Lebanon. Interestingly enough, the U.S. did not object, in fact, openly called on Israel to violate no less than 10 U.N. Security Council resolutions, calling on it to withdraw its forces from Lebanon. And during the 22 years, the Israelis held the southern part of the country, and for a few years in the mid-80s, much of the central part of the country as well. So this double standard, like a number of double standards the U.S. has regarding weapons of mass destruction and U.N. Security Council resolutions and democracy, where we seem to overlook transgressions by allies while threatening war for the same kind of behavior for the governments we don't like, and unfortunately has hurt the credibility of the United States, even when the positions the Bush administration may be taking are in themselves valid, such as promoting democracy and nonproliferation.
Mm-hmm. What are the goals, if these are discernible, from the outside of President Assad of Syria? It's always the United States' position that that the countries they don't like are aggressive, so that, you know, Iran is interested in territorial aggrandizement. Saddam Hussein was. Syria is. What are the issues there that make this seem, on the face of it, absolutely inexplicable?
Well, I mean, it's the same kind of thing we've seen for years. I mean, you may recall in the 1980s how the Reagan space administration put far, far more emphasis on human rights abuses by the Sandinista regime in Nicaragua, while downplaying the far worse human rights abuses by the U.S.-backed junta in El Salvador. So, you know, there's nothing particularly new on this. The problem, though, is at least when it came to Central America, the Democrats and at least some segments of the mainstream news media were pointing out these contradictions and raising these concerns, whereas there's a frightening degree of uniformity regarding U.S. policy and double standards on these issues when it comes to countries like Israel and Syria and Iran and in certain respects, Iraq as well.
Yeah, well, it still, in terms of my question, was, I suppose, what's Syria want, or what's it up to, or what are its goals? I mean, I don't think...
For one thing, you know, Syria, you know, Lebanon was historically part of Syria. It was carved out by French colonialists to get a country that was dominated by the Maronite Christian minority, who are historically Francophiles, and gave France a good inroads to that part of the part of the world. They also, but their main, and then they've also wanted to make sure that there weren't any unfriendly governments that could potentially come to power.
Mm-hmm.
The big issue even a bigger issue, of course, for Syria is getting back the Golan region, which has been occupied by Israel since 1967. And though Syria was rightfully criticized for many years for its really hard-line anti-Israel position, at this point, they're actually more moderate than the Israelis because they are supporting 242-338, long considered the basis for peace, that is, in return for full withdrawal of Israeli forces from territory seized by entities in the 1967 war. Syria would demilitarize that region, give security guarantees, have full diplomatic relations, international monitors, and the like. But the Sharon government has said, we're not going to even talk to Syria about that. We're never going to give up the Golan. And so it's ironic that democratic Israel, and which was for at least its first 20 years of existence, threatened by Syria and other Arab countries, is now really being the obstacle when it comes to a resolution on that front. But very few people dare say this, you know, given the understandable bias that many Americans have towards the Jewish state and the understandable hostility towards the autocratic regime in Damascus.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's maybe use that as a segue to talk about the Israeli Palestinian problem, let's say. And one always sees that as intractable. Yasser Arafat has died. A new prime minister is taken power, and it looks like there's some basis for cooperation.
And, you know, there's definitely that potential, though in many respects is as critical as I was of Yasser Arafat, and in certain ways he was more the excuse than the reason, I believe, for the peace process not moving forward, because despite the misinterpretations of what happened at Camp David in the summer of 2000, the peace process continued into early 2001, where the Barak's original proposal, which would have given the Palestinians barely more than a Bantustan over the West Bank, divided up into non-contiguous segments and the like, they have they got to a plan that was that looked pretty close to acceptable to all sides, but unfortunately Sharon came to power and he cut off negotiations. There haven't been substantive talks ever since. However, the Geneva Initiative, which took place a little over a year ago, where some mainstream politicians from both Palestinian territories and Israel, who were not currently in government but had close ties to at least to former governments in the case of Israel, came to an agreement very similar to the proposals that were in the talks in Taba in January 2001, and it appears that the Palestine Authority is willing to accept a solution along that lines, though it's been widely rejected by Israel. So again, we have a similar situation, that as many terrible things as you can say about the Palestine Authority in terms of the, especially under Arafat, in terms of the corruption, their autocratic rule, their inability or unwillingness to stop violence by extremist groups, and as many of the positive things you can say about Israel as this exemplary democracy for Jewish citizens, as a sanctuary for historically persecuted people, its progressive social institutions, etc. The Palestinian position and virtually all the outstanding issues of the peace process is far more moderate than that of the U.S. or Israeli position. Sharon's peace plan, while getting settlers out of Gaza, would essentially annex a good 40% of the West Bank and leave the Palestinians with these non-contiguous cantons, which are not surrounded by parts of Israel, which would not be a viable state by any measure.
Sure. Well, that's when you said earlier the phrase Bantustan, which refers to these phony autonomous little governmental units that the racist apartheid state of South Africa wanted to set up for the African people. And so it really seems like all or nothing. I mean, it really almost seems like that Israel would have to give up what it appears as though certainly Sharon is unwilling to do, and that is to exit to end the occupation of the West Bank and return all of that territory to the Palestinian people. And it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Yeah, it looks certainly not while Sharon is in power. Now, Palestinians have agreed to allow Israel to annex some settlement blocks right along the border in exchange for an equivalent amount of territory in what's now Israel. The Palestinians, remember, just go asking for 22% of historic Palestine. They were back in the Oslo Accord in 93. They essentially granted Israel the 78% of the country. But apparently the U.S. and Israeli position is that's too much. The Palestinians have to settle for less. But even a much more moderate and reasonable Palestinian leader than Yasser Arafat could never accept terms along those lines. So I really think what U.S. policy should be, frankly, is what you call tough love. Unconditional support for Israel's right to exist in peace and security, unconditional opposition to terrorist violence of all kinds.
of the Common Courage book, Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism. And he will be in Detroit Wednesday, March 9th, noon to 1:30 p.m. at the Alumni House on Wayne State University's campus. Then later that evening, 7:30 p.m. at the Pleasant Ridge Community Center at 4 Ridge Road. The following night, Thursday, 8 p.m., the University of Michigan, the Parker Room of the Student Union. Stephen Zunis, thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for tuning in to the RIF's Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more RIF Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
I'm David Hall from Rock Financial here with the MVP Chump.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The RIF's All Request.